You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone. Shannon Garcia getting you ready for our Survivor South Africa Immunity Island Week 13 content. What a fun episode. Such a lot to discuss, which Mike and I did with John Michelle on the recap for 2 hours and 25 minutes. And then at that point, you can hear Mike's exit interview with Queen Santini. So both things that you have to check out with two amazing guests on this podcast. Hope you enjoy, and I will see you on the other side. Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa Immunity Island. I'm your host, Shannon Gus, here to discuss episode 13, and I'm going to say it. I love the merge episode. It's tough for me, but I think this might have been my favorite episode of the season. So to talk about it, I have such a fun panel. I have my co-host as always, the outsurance to my overpowered rewards. It is the great Mike Bloom. Mike, thank you for being here.
Yeah, outsurance certainly has an MO at this point. Though I feel like in line with the episode, like it should have offered to take three people along with the immunity challenge, but then like you change your mind, but then you go back to those three people anyway at the end of the day, just saying what happened the past 10 minutes.
I just love that whenever outsurance comes, like we can say, isn't this like way too overpowered? Last time they had with ironically Smash going to Immunity Island, and there was like, you know, he got the insurance advantage and then he got food and he saw his family. Like actually there was a lot of similarities. So I feel like if you ever see outsurance and you're a contestant on the show, be happy because you're about to get something that it's probably too much. So that was a fun part for me. But I also want to welcome in our guest, who is a Survivor South Africa finalist, all-time great personality, and someone we always love to talk to about Survivor South Africa. It is the great Jean Michel. Jean, thank you for being here.
Oh, guys, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
How has everything been? It's been such a long time since we have talked with you, and obviously the world has changed so much, but is everything good with you?
Yeah, everything's great. Just got my second jab, so hopefully that opens up a little bit more opportunity to get out and about. We're just waiting for the rest of the world to sort of lift travel ban so that people can get actually out. But I mean, South Africa's been in some kind of lockdown for 520 odd days now. So I think pretty much the whole country is over it.
Over it and we're relying, I'm sure, on Survivor South Africa. That's the one thing I always think, like, we've been in lockdown Australia for this whole Australian Survivor season. Well, not Australia, but like Sydney and Melbourne for most of it. And I'm like, this should be good for ratings at least, right? Like glass half full, like for Survivor, is this not like a good thing, surely?
I know recently with Mnet specifically, they have brought back shows that when we had been to press junkets before, they had said they would never bring back. MasterChef South Africa is one of them. They said they would never do because it's so expensive. My Kitchen Rules is another cooking show that we have here, and they're bringing that back. And one of the reasons they're bringing them back is because they said that South Africa is in need of good family entertainment. Mm. So this is one of the things, I guess, that's doing really well in South Africa is entertainment. I mean, people are binging things they've never binged before. At the moment, my season is currently on TV on a completely different channel, and people are sliding into the DMs again and being like, hey, are you Jean from Survivor? I really hope you win. And I'm like, yep, me too.
But, maybe this time.
You know.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's interesting, though. You're sort of experiencing a smaller version of what happened when Survivor Heroes versus Villains in Cagayan went on Netflix, right? With like a whole new group of people discovering the show in lockdown. And I'm sure it's mixed emotions for you having to re-experience what you experienced 3 years ago.
Absolutely. But I mean, it's so weird because it doesn't feel like 3 years ago. I was doing my wrap up on a Sunday and I said, last year when I was in, I went, whoa. Firstly, last year was a different like time, and it wasn't last year. It was three seasons ago. It's such a blur. And when I watch it on TV, so many things come back, especially in this episode that we're talking about now, The Loved Ones, because that is the rawest episode in the season. And it brings back such visceral emotions.
I love your example that you brought up earlier of, you know, South Africans being fed up in lockdown. Because essentially right now, South Africa is Kieran and the lockdown is Santini. And it's just like, we've had enough. I need to say something right now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm going to build a fire and get over it.
Yeah. But Jean, you mentioned you're doing these wrap-ups every Sunday talking about the show. So, I mean, I love this episode. What did you think more generally about the season? Like, how are you enjoying the season?
I don't think I've ever enjoyed a cast more besides...
Your own?
No, that's it. No, I was going to say mine, but there are people that I don't enjoy from mine. So let's just leave that alone. But no, I think very few. I mean, I've spoken a lot to LaRue about casting it, and it's kind of it's somebody on paper versus somebody in real life, somebody in an edit. It's all different. But I think that this has been one of the most home runs that they've hit with casting. We've had incredible archetypes. And one of the things that LaRue said to me was that each and every one of the players that are on this season, almost all of them, are showmen. And that's what I'm enjoying. When I heard Chappies, I was like, who are you? Where do you live that you're this human being? But I'm so happy that you're on my TV.
Yeah, I can totally co-sign that. I mean, I think... There's a, like, LaRue casts better than anyone in the business. Like, he has a knack of finding extreme personalities, you know, present company included, who can be entertaining on TV. And also, I think just, like, they all bring such a distinct thing to it. I know that might sound simplistic, but, like, Kieran is a gamer, but he's, like, a gamer to its extreme. Even the way that he was, like, working it out in this episode at every step, like, there was no Immunity Island, which is what triggered the Nicole vote, and, like, on it goes. And it's, like, he finds people who, if they're going to be something, they're going to be that to 100. Like, Chappies is a personality, Santini. I don't know if it's South Africa who has these personalities, or LaRue and his team just have a knack of finding them, but, like, they do an awesome job.
Yeah. But I think now the show is reaching more people because it's available. Well, I think a lot of people have signed up for streaming platforms more than before. And this one is being streamed on Mnet streaming platforms. So, well, my season was on Showmax. It's the next one's going to be on Showmax and this one will be on Showmax. So a lot more people are watching South African Survivor. So they're going, oh, hold on a second. I see myself in Santoni or Sean or whoever it might be. I'm going to enter next time. And one of my favorite things about this cast is how diverse it is. For the first time ever, we've got a top five that is reflective of South Africa's like color spectrum, male, female. Like it's just, that has been one of my favorite things about how, and we didn't do it, we didn't sacrifice anything for it. Every single one of the players that came through, and we've got sexuality represented there with Santoni. We've got all these things that are there, and we didn't have to give up anything. We've got great characters, and we've got all these other things. And that's been one of my favorite parts about it.
Yeah, it's one of these things where when we open the episode with the League of Shadows, and I'm like, okay, cool, Batman reference, but then they make reference to what it's you know, named after, specifically the essays. I'm like, oh yeah, I didn't even notice that. And I guess I think that sort of is the best way to you know, show diversity in a cast is like, obviously it's represented from a visual perspective, but like, it's not the first and foremost thing you necessarily need to think of. It's personality first, but you're able to look at this wide swath of people and be like, oh, this is awesome. It's cool that these three guys were able to like look across the aisle, find each other, be like, yeah, I'm going to ride with these guys. And then, you know, one of them decides not to work with them and then decides to work with them again.
Yeah, in the space of five minutes. Yeah. For sure. I mean, I will say for Tyson, like, then he says we have Operation Get Rid of Chappies. I'm like, Tyson, not everything needs to be an Operation something. Like, that is not a name that rolls off the tongue. But well, I agree.
It's also, yeah, it's, I think it's clear that Inesu was the one that was naming all the operations, right? Like, it's probably clear she was the one coining Operation Destiny. Yeah. Tyson's trying it. Listen, everyone has their role in the group, right? Tyson's just not a name guy, okay? Yeah. Listen, I can sympathize with that.
Exactly. There's a lot of, you know, throwing at glass houses from you, Mike, in terms of naming things, because as we know, you're terrible at naming things, and so is Tyson. What is Operation Get Rid of Chappies? Okay, we can do better than that, Tyson, but look, probably not the worst.
It's not an operation. Just get rid of Chappies.
It's just a plan, okay? It's not an operation. We'll decide when things are an operation, but, you know, a lot going on in this episode. As I said, I loved it so much. I went through something in this episode because I went through a 5-minute grieving process for Kieran. I was like, oh my god, Kieran's about to go. And not just go with like an idol. In the last time you can play an idol, I was like, this is extremely sad. I'm going through the stages of grief. And then it turned around so quickly. I just felt like it was a hilarious episode. As I said, the outro and stuff, so funny. Smash making the best and worst move of the season in the space of 10 minutes. Here in a tribal with Tyson and Inesu backing him up. Like, there was so much entertainment here. Mike, did you feel the same? Am I too high on this episode? Like, I loved it.
It's so tough to say favorite, because when I look back, there really is just like a really good handful of episodes this season that I would say is next level. Like, I love the premiere. I love the Paul boot. I think the Keon boot, while a little bit straightforward, had some really great stuff in there. And then, of course, I have waxed profound about how much I enjoyed the Merge episode and especially last episode. But I mean, this was so wild, because up to this point, Smash had been doing, you know, a couple of things here and there, but this was really, I think, his coming out party, and, you know, leave it until episode 13 or so. But it's so interesting to see what I think has been a relatively low-key character so far in the game have this big spotlight moment, but also like not the best spotlight moment. It was for a hot second, you know.
I mean, for a second it was literally the best move of the entire season. But then it wasn't.
And it's so interesting to track though players' feelings. And John, I would love to get your feelings about this, because you were someone who at the final four decides to not make a similar move as Smash, but have this similar mindset, right? Of like, we've got to get a big move. I've got to clear this deck right here, make this easier for myself moving forward. And while you were able to pull the trigger, Smash not only didn't pull the trigger, he hands the gun to Kieran, said, sorry, man, I was going to shoot you with this, but here you go. You can have it. And I think it's so interesting to just track his psychology. I'd also like to imagine the extra day at camp probably both helped and hurt things. But I mean, listen, I'll be completely candid. I can't think of a worse move in Survivor history I have seen in some time than Smash going to Kieran and telling him to his face, I was going to blindside you, but we're okay now.
But then Kieran's reaction of being like, okay. Hilarious. Yeah, like, I totally agree. As I said, would have been the best move of the season, turned into the worst move of the season. John, I need your reaction, because I sent a photo of my, like, notes in the moment to Mike, and I was like, oh, now he's telling Kieran. And then, like, literally notes that were like, oh my god, what are you doing? Oh my god, stop doing that. What are you doing, Smash?
I mean, I don't even need to use my own words. I can use Kieran's words. You said, geez, what a stuff up.
Yeah.
Literally, I was like, wait a minute. This is the moment that I was waiting for in Rob season, where there is a clear leader, and if you sit next to him at the end, you will lose. And this is Kieran for me. And I'm like, okay, I'm just waiting. I mean, okay, it's not happening. Nobody's breaking up Tyson and Kieran. Like, and the psychology for me, it happened on the Loved Ones Challenge, where myself and Annalise sat at the beach while everybody else was having a nice time with their family and eating lekker food. And we were sitting there crying into our hands, being like, what the hell did we sign up for? That day she said to me, Sean, do you think you can beat Bandit? And I was like, I mean, I thought I could, but when you say it out loud like that, probably not. And then that followed up with Tom being like, Sean, he's not taking you. You need to wake up. And I was like, oh, snap. And I just keep waiting for that moment that somebody realizes, And I also am waiting for it from Tyson, because Tyson, and I've watched his Instagram and Twitter and stuff like that. He doesn't seem like a guy who lacks confidence in himself.
No.
So I don't think he's going to come to Jesus and say, oh, I don't think I can beat Kieran at the end. He 100% thinks he's the king and is going to beat Kieran at the end. And he needs somebody to be like Kieran. I mean, Tyson, I'm going to be sitting on the jury because I can see you both going to the end. And I'm not going to vote for you. So you need to figure out what you're going to do, because if you go with Kieran, you're going to come second. Mm, and it's just not happening.
I mean, to that point, yeah, because there's been a bunch of questions of like, when will Tyson cut Kieran, et cetera. Let me make a bold proclamation. It's not happening. I think the only way it would happen is if they get to a final three. It's a final two scenario. Let's say it's Chappies and the two of them. Chappies wins immunity and forcibly breaks them up.
Well, that's not them cutting each other. Like, that's
exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's the only way they're going to be split up. I think there. Otherwise, we would have seen content about it. And I think it's either their loyalty to each other or maybe the confidence that they'll be able to beat the other person. Like, I can see that from Kieran's side specifically, right? Like, Tyson's been riling people up. You know, I've been the one that's been making the moves behind the scenes. I can definitely beat him. Tyson, I'm sure, to your point, Jean, has a similar mentality as well. So, yeah, I think if people are looking for lack of a better term, a PK and Tevin situation, I don't think it's coming this season.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I could see them being split up before. Like, if Chappies wins immunity next week, we can talk about it. I could see them, you know, Chappies, Smash, and Nicole teaming up against the pair, because obviously Smash is a little fractured from them now, that being an understatement. But I don't see them cutting each other. And I guess I'm a little bit higher on Tyson's mentality than you guys seem to be. Like, I can see why at least he thinks he has a chance, and maybe even has a chance. Like, we see Kieran's plans. I think a lot of the gamers and the jury probably do as well. But Tyson has definitely been flashier. You know, like, as much as Kieran might have been pulling some of the strings at the merge vote, Tyson made that move, and it was a ballsy play. He played an idol in the pre-merge. He's had some really big plays. And I think that if we're not seeing them cut each other, it is because they're both so threatening in such different ways, as we've talked about the entire season, fire and water, that they could think, okay, well, I could really kind of articulate to a jury why this play was so powerful. And they would both, I think, have some, you know, rationale in that.
Yeah, but remember that Tyson sits at Tribal Council as a robot. And the people who decide this game are not the viewers and are not you and me and Mike. It's the people who are sitting there listening to Kieran lawyer himself up and paint a picture about what an incredible survivor player he is. So if the jury's sitting there having to make a decision between Tyson and Kieran, they're going to go with Kieran. And his jury play, his management of those people sitting there looking at him. I mean, Nico is like superfluous at this moment. He walks in over to Kieran. He's going to tell the stories. And that's the part that if I were Tyson, I would say, okay, cool. This is my buddy. This is a big kingpin in the game. He's my equal. And I said it before in a podcast with you. You don't have to go to the end and beat the best. You need to get them out the game. That's still beating them. And I think that that's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for that moment where they wake up and they say, yo, I'm not sure it's smart enough to go to the end where I really have to battle against the best, where I could take a Nicole and a Smash and walk it to the end.
I mean, I think that it's really, it's a difficult one for Tyson, but I think there is a lot of loyalty there. And now I think it's really hard because, I mean, is he coming back with Smash now to do that? Like, they kind of feel like they're on an island. It's amazing to me that Smash even voted with them here, as we'll talk about, topsy-turvy week. But, like, now they're in a 5-of-2. You can't really cut out that other one. Like, you kind of need that pair as much as you can. So I think they're very threatening. They need each other as ammo, especially at the moment. And unless Tyson can get back on the same page as Smash and maybe kind of replace the bromance to sit next to someone way less threatening from a jury perspective in Smash, I do think he does need the pair at the moment, at least till 4. Maybe you can start getting rid of him at like a 4 or a 3. But next week, they better stick together because I think they might have everyone coming for them. So they need that help.
I loved Kieran at Tribal Council. It was so good. Tyson had his big, you know, break out of the game bot come to life moment last week. We have it here this week. Who put a nickel in Kieran? Look, I understand it might not be the best. I mean, and then somebody piled like a whole bucket of change into it. I know that it might not be the best gameplay in game. Like, we can certainly talk about how I don't think maybe what he did in outing Smash is going to be great at the final five, as Shannon is talking about. But to Jean's point, I think for the jury, this was a great episode for Kieran. So it's this idea of like maybe expending some short term game in honor of some long term game if he does get there. Because to that point, up to this point, he has been regarded as like someone who is part of this pair. But like the entire talk that's been going on up until last round, right, was like Tyson and Warda are the big pair that need to be gotten rid of. And I could see the perception of, well, Kieran's there. He's involved in it, but he's not necessarily the big kingpin like Tyson. I think Kieran, while maybe not wanting to necessarily fly off the handle the way that he did, was at least, I think, making a really, really strong case for himself. And I think, honestly, vocalizing a lot of what the jury were thinking. And in Survivor, yeah, sometimes that's all you need to do. Again, that's the Sandra and Heroes versus Villains, right? Is like, oh, I believe in the same thing you did, even if you don't have the power to do so. I'm sure it earned a lot of favor with the jury to be like, yeah, stick it to Santini. I completely agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that, but I have to, like, you know, criticize the move from a game perspective. I mean, there'll be a lot that we can talk about and how are we not talking about what Smash did. But in terms of Kieran at Tribal Council, I feel like he should not, you know, have blown up Smash. But I feel like what happened was it happened 10 minutes before Tribal Council. And he's even sitting in confessional, like, do I blow this up? He doesn't even know if he can trust Smash. He knows he's not going home tonight. He's playing the idol. Obviously, the correct move, because if the four vote against him, they can split. He needs to play it on himself, even though it's public. But I don't think he knows that he can trust Smash, but he might have alienated him. It is kind of crazy that Smash continues to vote with them through this vote, despite being vocally called out. So he risks it there. He risks Tyson's life in the game right now, that they could be in the outright minority. He doesn't know if he's keeping Smash with them. And also, I think, like, he risks it for the final five. And also, he alerts the minority to the fact that something has happened on the other side, that they should play a fire idol, and he triggers that. So yeah, I mean, not Kieran's best move, but it was an emotional moment, obviously.
And I think, talking about emotions, I honestly think that we all think that they're going to be these game bots and bring Smash back into the fold. But have you met Tyson? One scorn, that guy's going to come for you with all the revenge that he's got piled up in the baggage that he's carrying around. He's not just going to walk over and be like, oh, Smash, come back. Come back into the League of Shadows, you big sun ball of man.
Yeah, no, back to Operation Get Rid of Chappies.
100%. This is my prediction. They're going to be blinded by how annoyed they are. And I don't know. This actually, their response to this could make or break their game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know with Kira, because it's an interesting one, because it feels so emotional, because it's so vocal, and because there's you know, a logical point to it, as we're saying, but then he is also weighing it up in confessional. Only Kieran could be like, I'm just going to weigh up right now whether I should be emotional about this, you know? Like, that's such yeah, a Kieran yeah. thing, but I'm really interested where it goes from them.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I think, like, let's pivot, if we can, to talking about Smash. Firstly,
yes,
obsessed with the fact that Smash is being self-deprecating about this on Twitter. Like, he's into it. He knows what happened. We're making memes, and he's part of it, and I love that. But Okay, let's talk about the good first. Because as I said to him on Twitter, I'm like, to be fair, half of this move was incredible. He makes this move against Kieran. And Mike, what did you see as triggering this move? Did you like this move as much as I did? Because I saw this, I'm like, this is like Lisa Holmes in Survivor New Zealand. Like, this is final six, same number. This is a game-winning move to take out a huge threat with an idol. Like, I've seen this film before. And on that jury move alone, and also just by clearing a path, like, I think I saw Smash as a legitimate winner contender for that 6 minutes.
I mean, not only that, I think it's even more impressive because it's not even the Lisa Holmes of like, let's vote someone out with an idol in their pocket. I think the impetus was, let's vote Kieran out while he plays an idol on Tyson.
Mm.
You know, that because that's even
the
more
last
so.
Time you can play an idol. It would have been horrible to watch that happen to Kieran.
I mean, it would have been absolutely devastating, but so much fun to watch. I was perked up in my seat. Like when we get to the immunity challenge halfway through the episode, right? You're like, all right, something's got to happen back at camp. And something happened back at camp and then some. And I think it shows that, look, I'm sorry, Smash, you have not gotten inoculated. You have come down with a case of big move itis. And it shows here. Mm-hmm. And it shows that sword cuts both ways, where if you feel like one of the reasons why I think he ends up making this move against Kieran is because they want to get rid of Nicole, which I think is an interesting choice. In this moment, they say, look, Santini and Chappies are a pair, but like, with the assumption that Immunity Island is over, mm-hmm. we don't need to worry about both of them being protected. So, like, it'll be three against two no matter what. But that is something that Anella is not necessarily happy about. You know, I know that they were sort of stringing Nicole along, but I think that the old bonds of Zomba seem to be a bit stronger than the League of Shadows at this point. And so I do think it was a combination of targeting Nicole versus, again, the big move-itis infecting Smash's brain and saying, well, listen, this can't be your move. And if it is, you know, if you get blamed for this, the Zombas are going to be mad at you. So it's damned if you do, damned if you don't, that he decides to then make, in my opinion, what is the better move and decide to go for Kieran here.
Mm. How did you see it, John?
You know, there's a voice in the back of my mind. Do you remember when Warda brought up misogynistic comments that were coming from mm-hmm. Smash, and there was that whole thing that came through? This is the second time that a woman has told Smash what to do, and he's done the exact opposite. He does not like to be told from a woman what to do. And this is just clearly, I was so flabbergasted at how little he understands about the game when the 2-2-2 vote came up, and he was like, why are you complicating it? He's like, it's a simple vote. I'm like, the fact that simple vote came out of your mouth in Survivor at this point in the game is frightening. There's no such thing as a simple vote. And very easily, your simple vote could have been kiboshed by Kieran getting a whiff, because let me tell you, that man can read the room that something was up. And all he needed to do was switch the idol and your whole gameplay is gone. So I just, the fact that he was willing to throw out such a good move because it wasn't going to be attributed to him, and now somebody else is complicating his very simple / complicated / there's a problem with this idea. I struggle to follow his logic. Mm.
So I have a theory here, because this is what we hear from him. He tells the group it's too complicated. Now, whenever you say something to a group on Survivor, you don't tell it to me in confessional. I think there could be an agenda. If any part of this was due to the complexity, I will lose my mind, because it's a 2-2-2 split vote. It couldn't be easier, and there's been a lot of confusion around split votes on Australian Survivor, and it's starting to drive me a little bit batty.
Smash cooked it.
Yeah.
So, ironically enough, after the cook left, he cooked it.
So if there was any part of that that was true, I'm done. I'm done with this whole thing. But the thing what he tells to us is a CV thing, and I do think that that mattered to him. He cannot stop talking about resumes. A big part of the Nicole thing of how he didn't like that move was it would be on Kieran's CV, and I do think he worries that, like, Zomba will seem as depowered if the other Zomba goes, like, how are you making decisions? So the resume thing, I think, is valid to him. I think it shouldn't have been a reason, because he's coming up with the plan. He has all the information. He's turning everyone against Kieran. Someone suggesting a split is semantics. He's building the house. Santi is being like, all right, well, let's, like, paint that wall a certain color. Like, it's decoration to your move, and it would not be credited to Santi.
And he's like, nope, tear down the house.
Exactly. Like, if he had made that move and Santi decided to split, like, I'm still giving Smash 3 chizzy points every day of the week. Like, it's his move. So if he cared about that, which he clearly did, I do believe he did, I think that was the wrong read on that. But here's my theory. Part of me wonders if he didn't want to split because he'd rather even someone like Nicole gets idled out than losing Tyson on the split. And if that's the case, at least it has more meaning to me. It's not just like, you know, kind of throwing it all out for no reason. I still think do it. I think at that point you've made the plan. I think at that point just make the blind side immaculate. Because at that point, Kieran's playing an idol on Tyson, so you're fine. So just execute it well. But part of me does wonder if he feared putting two votes on Tyson, who might be his closest ally in the game. We know that relationship's been really, really important. Maybe that meant he didn't want to split at all, but he still shouldn't have thrown it out. But possibly that also, you know, added to the pile of why he wanted to flip back.
In the same confessional, he also said, I've been playing a great game. And when? What? What do you mean? Do you mean that you have been riding the coattails of Nicole? I mean, you wouldn't be in the game anymore if she hadn't won the tied destiny. So I just, his view of the game is so like rose colored glasses. It fascinates me.
Mm. Well, you know, what's ironic is that Santini ends up getting voted out of the game by someone who was acting like Santini in this episode. Right? To Jean's point, Smash took on this sort of Santini attitude, and I love her, but I think even she admits to this of like, this is not best for my game. It should be my idea. It doesn't serve my agenda, so I need to go back on this plan. And this episode was poetic for so many
Santini
reasons.
Yeah, Santini, she got Santini!
Yeah, and like Santini said, like, she ends up getting beat in fire by the guy that she saved with an idol, you know, essentially in the pre-merge. So, like, ironies on top of ironies here. But I just love this idea that, yes, Santini is really like the straightforward, logical one here, coming up with an incredibly cogent plan and is undone by someone who's acting a bit more emotional and saying like, well, it doesn't serve my best interest, so I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, I just wonder how much was like the pure irrationality and how much he had meaning to it. But even so, like every single day of the week, once you're in bed, like you've made your bed, once you're talking about it, there was no good way to go back to Kieran and be like, well, I told everyone about your idol, we're blindsiding you. Like at that point, it is done. You cannot turn back even if you want to, I think, as he's discovered. But there might have been some rationality there. And I think possibly a lot of it, you know, was in his relationship with Tyson. But I do think when Kieran comes with the plan for Nicole, and as I've said, everything Kieran does is like ridiculously rational. Like the speed at which he thinks of the game is crazy. And the move that he was thinking of against Nicole would have been like a possible like 3-2-1 against an ally whose brother had helped him find an idol today or yesterday.
Oh, bloody.
Like, it was brutal. And it was really, really fun. And, like, the thing
Peter Pumpkin Eater.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I'm like, there definitely was a better way to do this. Like, his sister could have stood on his shoulders. Like, he didn't need to include her, but it would have been hilariously brutal had he voted Nicole out, you know, just like the next day. And the thing is, I think voting Nicole out makes total sense for him. It makes sense for Tyson. It makes sense for the League of Shadows objectively if they want to get to the top three. Now that he, as he said, you know, Immunity Island might not be in it anymore. Now they don't have to worry that if they vote out Nicole now, that Chappies wins next time and sends Santini to Immunity Island, the three of them would be the only vulnerable people again. But even within that logic, I think there's a part of it where, like, Smash was so clearly uncomfortable. And I think there's logic in that, too. Like, I think he doesn't want to look depowered in front of Zumba. I think he doesn't want to lose his major connection. You know, and that there's validity to that. So I think he needs to read, like, as much as this has reason, as much as this has logic to vote out Nicole now, like, he doesn't want to do it. And maybe we should be concerned about that. But also maybe we should, like, you know, we need him for his vote at the moment. So maybe we should placate him. And he was trying to make him happy in other ways. But I think at a point you're just like, look, you don't want the vote. You don't want the move. Your voice is super important here. We're not doing it. Even if that move does have extreme rationale for the League of Shadows.
Why tell Kieran? If you flipped and that was a plan, and you were like, oh, great plan. 3 seconds later, terrible plan. And you're going to go back to your original thought and the original plan. Why go and literally tell Kieran the way you have just burnt everything to the ground? I don't understand that point. What was his thinking behind telling Kieran? Because if for some reason you believe somewhere along the line somebody's going to land up on the jury, somebody like Kieran, and he has that information? What?
The only thing I could possibly think of is that he felt it would look worse if a Nicole or Chappies or Santini came to Kieran and offered up that information, right? This idea of like, well, if you have to hear it from someone, you might as well hear it from me, that maybe he'd be able to mitigate damage more than if they, someone else told him, outed that Smash had been plotting behind his back. But still, it looks, it's just bananas. It's okay. Absolutely bananas that he just like straightforward goes to the well and says, hey, just so you know, this is going to sound a little awkward. I tried to vote you out with an idol. Tonight, we're not going to do that anymore. And I guess, you know, we didn't see this on screen, but I guess we have to look at the results and give Smash a little bit of credit here. If one of the reasons why he wanted to take out Kieran was so that he, you know, they didn't need to take out Nicole, it seems like the trio end up turning their votes onto Santini instead of Nicole at Tribal Council. So my assumption is, after that incredibly awkward conversation at the well, Kieran is like, okay, fine. Look, if you got spooked by that, we won't vote Nicole. We'll vote Santini. We'll worry about Nicole another day. And if, I guess, mission accomplished, if we're talking about missions, but at what cost?
Okay, Mike, I'm so glad that you said that, because I was going to come in with like another crackpot theory, and it was that. So I'm glad that you're on the same wavelength, because we don't see why it changes from like Nicole, who it seems like it's going to be, even when they're talking about who the other two are voting for and who it necessarily might need the split. It's like, it's going to be Nicole, and then it becomes Santini. And all we see is this final conversation between Kieran and Tyson, where Kieran, in the last minute, like literally they're like, hey, see you at Tribal. And Kieran's like, who are we going for, Nicole or Santini? And Tyson says, let's go with either her or it. I couldn't really hear. It is what it is. And that makes me feel like, I don't know how purposeful it was, but I do think there is a possibility that Smash came back. He was like, look, I was going to blindside you, but now I'm not. A lot of chaos happening. Like, should we just use the chaos to just like go for Santini, maybe getting his objective there? Like, is he actively using it to get Santini out instead of Nicole? Or is it like at that point, there just isn't enough time and there's too much chaos to get something like Nicole over the line and they just go with it? Whether it was on purpose or not, I do feel like Smash did achieve an objective in that. But I mean, he like knocked over a whole bunch of stuff to get there. It's like, he got to the finish line, but he just like set the whole race on fire to get there. But the person he wanted out was Santini. And that's what was so funny about this episode. It was like, imagine you're 30 minutes in and I tell you, Chappies has just won immunity and Santini's the boot. You're like, that's such a boring episode, but you don't know that it's going to be everyone else in the entire camp and there's going to be fire making and then Santini's going to go. So it went in a lot of different directions, but it did go back to Smash's target. I don't think I can give a lot of credit to that, but it is something that happened that I want to point out.
Yeah, it's just, I still can't believe it happened. It's and maybe it's also just like, this is such a transparent cast and like a group of gamers of Game Respects Game, though I think it's very clear from last episode that, you know, emotions are still very much involved in there. I mean, what I think is interesting as well is that everything comes out at Tribal Council.
Yes.
Too, right? We talked about this with Kieran, but even Smash is like, I can't vote out Nicole because it would cost all these people votes into getting to the Zambas.
You and people, it's like, you ones over there.
He's outwardly saying, hey guys, if I vote out Nicole in the next few days, just don't give me a jury vote, because that's essentially what I'm saying in this moment.
Yeah,
it was shocking to me how honest everyone was at Tribal Council. And I loved it from like an entertainment perspective. From a gameplay perspective, I am just completely befuddled, but in the best way.
One of the other things that confuses me is every time that Smash comes and says, hey guys, I'd like to play the game, but I really don't want to get my hands dirty. Can we perhaps like do a vote where I mean, I'm totally on board with you, but I really don't want to vote. I don't want to have to write down that name because I don't want them to be angry at me on the jury. And everybody goes along with it.
Because you're thinking back to the
time. Yeah.
This is the, what was this, the Mike vote or the Paul vote, right? Yeah, where he's like, this plan, and like emotionally I'm on board, but physically I cannot be, but like we're still cool, right?
And everybody's like, sweet, cool, let's move on. I'm like, wait a minute. What game are you playing? This is not like let's be besties.
Yeah.
The whole point of this is to vote people out. And at the end, it's all about how you speak to the jury and say, like, yeah, I voted you out, but that's why you should give me your vote. And he's like, I don't want to vote for that person. I mean, he didn't want to vote. He didn't want to get Paul upset, but Paul didn't have any say in the game. It wasn't even merged. He was going home. Are you scared he's going to arrive at your front door and give you a smack? What?
Well, the irony about it is that he's so focused on the jury. I mean, he's so focused on resumes, so focused on CV, the massive issue. It seems like more of an issue than just losing Nicole as an ally, and even depowering himself in front of Zamba if he lost Nicole was like, that'd be Kieran's move on the CV. It's like, yeah, but Kieran's CV is like a lot longer than yours. Like, who cares at this point if he adds this one thing compared to you? Like, that seemed to be his driving factor. And then, as we know, like, CV was a big deal in terms of him flipping, in terms of him flipping back. But now, as you said, there was like so much transparency in front of the jury. Like, it looked so bad, particularly in front of the jury, that it happened to throw up in this way. And like, also, I think that might have just been because it was 10 minutes before tribal. Like, there's another world where it's 2 hours before tribal and you have the fight at camp. But it happened to come out here. It happened to come out of tribal council. They all see it here. And the amazing thing, we just need to talk about it. We need to talk about the fact that Kieran blows up his spot spectacularly in front of the jury, and he still votes with them. How did this happen?
Well, so this begs a question that I know has been bandied about, that, you know, is there a scenario where if I'm Santini, I say, like, look, Anella's the snake in the grass here, right? He's the bad egg. Let's weed this. Let's throw this egg in the trash. Let's just vote out Anella and move forward. From Kieran and Tyson's perspective, no, that's not the right thing to do, because Smash is still voting for them. The next day, they might not be, but like, you're guaranteed to at least survive this tribal council and then worry about it. As opposed to like, if you vote out Smash, things look a lot more dangerous than if you had him in the game and you could still, yes, he's in between essentially two pairs at this moment, but like, you have much more of a relationship with him. If you keep Santini in, she's guaranteed to work against you. With Smash, maybe not.
I did think that was the way it was going walking into tribal. Like, I'm not gonna, especially when he started calling Smash out. I was like, he's betrayed every single one of them in the space of the last half an hour. Like, how are they all not turning around and pointing the finger at him?
Well, okay, here's another question. Has he become a goat over the course of an afternoon?
Yes. I mean, this whole move was in like pursuit of trying to give himself a bit of a resume, and instead he burned any resume he had, got embarrassed in front of the jury, and he looks terrible. Like, I feel like at this point, like, I don't think he could sit next to anyone anymore. Like, I literally feel like he had a game winning move and then a game losing move, like, right side by side.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that he basically guaranteed himself a final three, because everybody's like, I want to sit next to that guy.
There you go. He's going to the end. What a great move.
Yeah, I don't know, though, because it seems like on the next time on, again, as you talked about before, like, Kieran and Tyson seem PO'd at the moment. And maybe they feel like, look, Nicole's maybe someone we could bring over at the four to get rid of Chappies if we need to. But like, I don't know if we want Smash in the game at this point. It's so interesting to watch him again. Really come out of the weeds this time. And there have been players in the past, present company included, who have laid low for a while and said, all right, now that we're at the point, the end of the game, time to strike, time to make the cut when I need to. But he made the cut with a butter knife, where it just left a scratch without actually going for any sort of lethal damage at this point. So I'm really intrigued to see how we approach things, because while you think on paper, obviously Chappies is, you know, Chappies is the next one to go. Knowing Kieran specifically, I don't know. I think if there's a chance of Chappies loses immunity, I think there is a non-zero chance that he survives here and they go after a Smash or maybe even a Nicole.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too. I think that this worked out very well for Chappies, because I think he comes back and all of a sudden that glowing light is no longer as much on him as it is on the three members in the League of Shadows, and they're going to battle it out. And I mean, if I had to pick a winner, it's certainly not going to be Smash. So it's going to be a very interesting when they walk back into the tribal, that post vote coming back to the beach, because if we think we've seen flames before, I think we've seen absolutely nothing. I think, I mean, is Anella going to cry? Maybe.
Well, I mean, the thing with Chappies is he's coming back from Tribal, and he wasn't, like, a main person in this Tribal. He was telling Sun to Nee to calm down, which was funny.
Yep.
Given what we saw last week, like, if anything, Tyson was backing up Kieran. Kieran, who we heard nothing from. Kieran and Smash, who really were completely silent, as we talked about last week, were hugely vocal in this Tribal Council, obviously, and Sun to Nee. So Chappies comes back and he's like, am I not the troublemaker right now? Like, that's a great day for me. So I'm just going to kind of sit here with that. And I want to talk about Sun to Nee and Chappies, because there has been some talk about, you know, they gave up their idol last time. And Mike, where do you sit with that now? Because we both really like that move, but Sun to Nee, you know, has immediately gone home. So has your perspective changed?
I mean, listen, like, if you're looking at hindsight, then yes, the decision to send her away instead of Smash would have been better. But at the same time, this was not an open and shut case. You can look at the voting chart all you want, but there was an opportunity for Sun to Nee and Chappies to survive this Tribal Council, especially if Smash ends up going along with this 2-2-2 idea. Like, then we think they're geniuses for doing so, right, and not needing to do it. So I would not say it's necessarily as binary as, of course, now Sun to Nee and Chappies made a mistake. Like, it wasn't like they were guaranteed to go as soon as the final six round happened. Plus, they didn't know that Immunity Island was gone at this point. So, like, there was a very good chance that they both would have been safe again. So I really don't think it's that open and shut. I think the circumstances didn't end up working out. But as we've just talked about, there was a very, very big opportunity that they could have easily been a part of to have survived and, you know, not have worried about not using that idol.
That's the thing for me is Immunity Island. Because last week I'm like, well, they might as well give up the idol, because either Chappies wins Immunity, he sends Sun to Nee, they're both safe, or he doesn't, they're both vulnerable, they could split on the idol. And I think, like, it's unforeseeable that Immunity Island wouldn't be there, and that completely changes the plan. And they still work within that and almost got done, but I do think that that changes the format very much. I do think what we said last week about taking Warrior out and it should have been Tyson, I think more than ever now that they should have taken out Tyson, because the league, like, once we came back and we heard it had a name again, like, naming things like League of Shadows, I'm like, that's a really tight thing you left in. And again, I have my crackpot theories about Tyson and Smash's relationship proving pivotal. Like, for me, leaving that in the game, even though, yes, Smash did flip on them in this episode, he also flipped back and they left that dynamic in the game. So that, to me, I like, has reinforced for me that I think they should have taken the power of the idol and the opportunity they had last week to take out Tyson.
John lies, but also tells the truth energy is what you just said. She, like, Smash flips, but he also flips back sometimes.
I'm going to say I'm pretty sure that we are missing a big chunk of the story. There's something that we're not getting about this day that on the beach that these guys had. There's something missing, because it just, the way it played out, just.
Well, you think Smash didn't lose his entire mind?
No, I think he did.
Right. But why? Yeah.
But I think that how he, I mean, it's such a fumble. It's such a fumble that you have to go, did you somehow find beers on the beach? Did you, like, been brewing some coconut water? There's something else to the story that we're not getting, because it to have fumbled so badly. And then, as you say, to go and vote with the people who are now, like, throwing you under the bus, and then be like, I know you're under the bus, but we're still going to vote for you.
He voted with them while under the bus. Like, as they were driving over him, he's like, here's my vote. And he, like, passes it up to the driver's seat.
So bizarre. There's so many things that have left, like, X-Files taste in my mouth with this one, where I'm just like, I don't know if we have all the information. And things were happening so late as well. I think that scramble was very intense. And I'm pretty sure that was going until literally they're walking to Tribal. Like, that movements were frantic.
All right. So I have a crackpot theory here.
Yes, this is the podcast of crackpot theories. Why did Smash lose his mind? An investigation. Yeah.
Smash was love drunk. I think.
And now there it's hungover. Yeah.
There's something in Survivor about sometimes when you get a visit from a loved one, you are imbued with this sense of, like, okay, now I remember what I'm competing for, right? And granted, for in this first match, it was his
but
brother.
Then you don't turn back like that. Like that, like, I understand if that like pushes into a flip, but the flip was logical. But how could he flip back? Like, that's the opposite of what people
he
buy,
was love
feel.
Drunk.
What?
He's making decisions. That, I mean,
I think Mike's onto something here, because his reaction at that reward, the man was inconsolable, crying like pick yourself off the ground kind of crying. There might be something to that theory where he was just completely, and listen, I will tell you this deep into the game. I keep telling people who didn't go that far in our season that you actually have no idea how hard the game is this far on. Because after this day, in my season, this was the first day I had an inkling of like, what the hell am I doing here? Is this game for me? Can I win this game? It's so cruel. What am I doing here? It was the first day I ever had a quitting. Is it my time to like, what am, like, why am I here? Mm-hmm. And it's a very, I mean, it wasn't cruel for them because they all got to see their loved ones. So on the flip side, he's now emotional. He's full of like that amped up energy, but he's just seeing his loved ones and he misses his people. And I think you might be onto something there, Mike.
Yeah, I think especially at Tribal Council, right, when he's talking about like the head versus the heart, I'm like, who is this guy?
That guy was lying, Mike. Like, that's all it was.
This is the guy that was sneaking away Future Life bars and like, you know, in week three, and he's talking about like, well, I just couldn't do it in my heart. And you know what it reminds me a bit of as well is last season. I know you said, John, that like you were waiting for someone to go against Rob, but remember, Steffi goes to see her friend on Island of Secrets. And then gets this idea in her head of like, oh my God, yeah, I forgot what this game is about. I have to go after Rob now. I think love drunkenness is a thing on Survivor sometimes. When you get that dose of home, you get that reminder of why you're there and you look outside the game, it makes you be like, all right, I guess I better start doing something.
Well, there's also a level of pressure, right? Because, I mean, you think of a conversation that Tyson had with his buddy, and Anela had a very similar conversation with his brother where he said, you know, we think you can win this, right? So all of
and
a sudden,
like,
you're
I
like
can't.
Cruising along.
Yeah.
I can't because I'm about to burn it down. You have no idea.
Mm.
So I think that maybe that pressure as well is like you're cruising along and you kind of forgot that there's a whole family and friendship network of people who, you know, you've been away from for longer than even a normal season of Survivor because they had to go into quarantine. So you're now going, oh, flip, I am here to win this million rand, to get this title and to be sole survivor. And all of a sudden the pressure of that extra layer of like, oh, it's not just me who wants me to win, you know, like that's hectic too. So I think that there's definitely an emotional wetting of the bed that happens.
Emotional wetting of the bed is easily the best statement that could come out of this. That should be the title of this episode. I completely agree. But I think, okay, firstly, the head and the heart thing was a lie. Like everything he's telling us about why he's coming back to Kieran is not in terms of heart. It's in terms of CV. It's in terms of this isn't going to be credit to me. Maybe there's a Tyson component to it. It's too complicated. It's not a heart thing. But I do understand why he's saying that maybe to Kieran. Or even Kieran was saying, like, he didn't even say that to me. But he's saying now, like, what's the best that this could look? Like, he's sitting there on the way to Tribal Council and thinking, how can this look best for me? It's like, I just care too much. I don't buy it for a second. But I will say I do buy half of your theory, Mike. Love drunkenness. I think love drunkenness was part of what convinced him to flip originally. Because even he has the conversation with Nicole when he's originally flipping and he's like, I don't want to sit next to Tyson and Kieran. And it's like, well, that's your end game plan. So I understand that part of it, it's like, well, I'm in this really good group and we're like doing a thing. And then you realize that group is a really threatening jury contender. So I think that compared with also Kieran making a move that he didn't necessarily want to make, feeling like he has less of a voice, possibly losing his ally Nicole or looking worse in front of the jury or making Kieran look even better in front of the jury, paired with, okay, I remember what I'm playing for. I really need to have a chance to win. I think that could push him into making the flip. I don't think love drunkenness pushed him into flipping back because love drunkenness makes you want to play better. Like love drunkenness makes you think that allies you've loved from day one are less important to you. It doesn't make you make heart moves, doesn't make you be loyal. Like it reminds you that you're loyal to your family and not this random that you met like 35 days ago. So I don't think that's why he flipped back to Kieran. I think he was love drunk. He flipped to the right move, to like the best move of the season. And then I don't know, some split vote weirdness, some CV stuff, some strange thing happened in his mind, and the investigation will continue into what the hell happened in his mind, but I don't think that his family can be blamed for the horrible move. Like, how dare you blame Smash's brother for that horrible move?
So, I'm sorry, Scooby! Hopefully I'm still part of the family reunion from that perspective.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's like Amanda Kimmel's bird calls. I think it's just, the idea is so weird to me, of this idea of like, not on my resume, because final tribal council, like, don't worry about your resume until that point. It doesn't matter. That's the opportunity for you to give yourself credit. Mm-hmm. That's the opportunity for you to tell your story. And you can spin the yarn however you want to. It's not like at this moment there's a big leaderboard of like blind sides pulled off. And it's like, all right, well, that's an X in Smash's column. Good thing he pulled it off and now he's in the lead. So much about final tribal council is telling your story, telling your narrative, and being able to convince people that sometimes the things that you didn't actually do, you meant to do. And I think that it's a little bit too much of, in my opinion, like a critical or analytical approach to a final tribal council that is almost always more emotional and personal. Like, you should not worry about what moves are being attributed to what people, because to Jean's point, there's a chance you might not be sitting at the end with those specific people. And in the end, like, then you've got to make it there first.
Especially if you blindside them spectacularly at the final six, then you definitely won't be. But he was on the path to doing that.
Yeah, you've got to be able to sit at the end and actually have the opportunity to plead your case. Mm. If that doesn't happen, then having a CV, like, well, you know, does it matter? No, not at all. Because
might get you chizzy
the game... I mean, can we cash those in? Because then I think I'm owed some money somewhere.
No, they're worth absolutely nothing, Sean.
Man.
How many
but if you I've got lots of knickers in my back pocket. But if you don't outlast, there is no outplaying and outwitting. That's what I kept saying at the finale. People were upset about my game and didn't understand what I was doing, and I was like, but I'm here. So that's the main part about Survivor. You got to get to the end before you can try and tell them how you did it.
Mm. And that's such a legitimate way to do it, I think. I wouldn't say Smash is laid low, because I think he was a big part of what was happening on like Vuna 2.0, and he's had relationships, but like he hasn't been the biggest player. And I think that a really legitimate way to win would be to kind of play that quieter game, have social relationships, then make a killer move like this, sit at the end with people you can decide to sit with, maybe like Nicole, who doesn't have this on her resume, maybe someone like Santini, who's less like, for example, take out the big threats and do it really, really close to the end. And that's why it was like so painful to watch it slip out of his hands, because I was like, after doing not that much through the whole season, like this could be the one move you need to make that, and then you maintain it, but you make this one move and you can win the game from there. So, I mean, I hate to rub it in, but my God, he almost won the game in this episode. So, you know, a lot to build and a lot to break down.
But I feel the same way about literally anybody at this point up until this episode. I thought if somebody pulls the trigger and gets out Kieran and Tyson, they have an opportunity to win. Because until recently, I thought there was no chance Nicole could win. And all of a sudden, I'm like, but actually, you've won a whole bunch of immunity challenges. And if you could rally people and put a plan together and oust Kieran and Tyson, you can win Survivor. And the same thing could be said with Anela. The same thing can be said with Santuni. If Santuni came back and had a monster plan, and she voted out Kieran and Tyson, she would have an argument at the end to make her the sole survivor. If she's sitting next to Chappies, it doesn't happen. But if Santuni's sitting there next to Nicole and Anela and they didn't do any of those moves and Santuni did, you've got to think that the jury has to go, okay, cool, you're annoying, and you flip-flopped. But that's a strategy in itself, and congratulations, it worked.
So I cannot believe we're nearly an hour into this podcast and we have barely mentioned Santini. That feels like the first time in quite some time that we have done this. And it was her boot episode. Incredibly tragic to lose her. I mean, I guess the best possible way, you know, she ends up getting the second chance with fire making, even though she loses, this is the first time she ever made fire. she goes out, to be quite honest, one of the better players in this episode, because she's the one to suggest this 2-2-2 plan that would have gone over completely smooth had it not been for Anella. Yeah. But I mean, John, I would love to hear your thoughts on Santini, because I do think there are several tenets that you both have in common in both like your gameplay and your background.
Yeah, 100%. I met Santini in March last year. It was in that weird stage of the casting when they had cast, and then COVID hit, and all of a sudden a massive big pin was put in the whole of Survivor. Boom, we're not doing this. We can't do it. There's no way forward. And then that was what the plan was for a year. Then nothing happened. And I met her at a concert, and I said to my girlfriend at the time, because Santini came over, she's like, I'm not allowed to tell you this, but you know, I may or may not have entered Survivor, and I was just like, who are you, and do you ever breathe in between your words? I thought to myself, I literally said to my girlfriend afterwards, I was like, Darren, listen, that chick's a lot, right? but I would love to watch her on TV. And when I saw her that she was actually cast, I'm like, okay, rad. I have so much in common with Santini that the mouth brain filter that we both don't have. I mean, the amount of fumbles that she had with giving information that she wasn't supposed to, or saying things or challenges that were just like, oh, maybe I should have kept that to myself and looked for an idol myself. Or the blunders that she had with the clues. And so many of those things made me think, oh, we're the same people. I'm so glad there's somebody else out there fumbling their way through Survivor and like winning the hearts of people, because there was an innocence to it. She was flip-flopping, and I have said it in my recaps 1,000 times, is that a lot of people are attacking her for that. But I think people like Kieran and Tyson have got as far as they have because of the information that they got from Santini. They wouldn't have been able to pull the moves that they have pulled without her playing both sides. And Kieran's now coming and being like, oh, I now have to play double agent for a game I don't respect, but you benefited from it. And so I think she didn't get a lot of credit for the way that she had to play. And there were a lot of big characters and there were a lot of big players, and she played the middleman and has from day one. It's been exhausting for her. Mm-hmm. Imagine the amount of work and thought process. I know Chappie's, when he was stealing food, is like, it takes a lot for me to keep this body going, for me to win. But imagine the mental capacity that Santini has to know what story she's told who, what lies are up in the air, who she's actually aligned with, what the plans are, and then to still come and sit down in an episode like this and come up with an actual plan that could work. I mean, Anneli's done nothing and he can't come up with a decent plan. Santini has been playing from day one and having to keep a million balls up in the air and still comes up with a genuine plan to get them getting rid of a big player in Survivor. So, I mean, I've loved seeing her on the show, and I think she represents, for me, an interesting Survivor player that we don't often get to see. Somebody like myself who's terrible at the challenges, but is got a social game that nobody can quite put their finger on.
Wait, you cannot say terrible at the challenges, Miss I won individual immunity twice, okay?
Until that day, let me tell you, I hated walking into the challenges, man. But at the end, it was just, again, it was luck that the ones that I got at the end suited my skill set. But I'd say
no, John, it wasn't one. You won them, it wasn't luck.
Not that I, it's not lucky that I won them. I'm saying it was lucky that those challenges came up when they did.
No, it wasn't. Luck involved.
Listen to me. Because had Vanner been in that ball challenge, he would have won that.
You got her out. You earned that. And then you won the challenge. You did it all.
I did. But I'm saying, had that challenge been planned for when there were five people in the game and not three, four people in the game, it would have been a different outcome. So the timing was perfect for me. Mm. And yes, I did win it. I'm not even going to tell you, because I smashed it out at the end when nobody else could. But I'm saying that the timing just lined up perfectly for me. And before that, every time I walked into a challenge, I was like, yeah, not a skill I have. No, this is not going to work for me. And just at the end, I mean, I didn't think I was going to win that dragon challenge, let me tell you, that was a joke. I walked in there and was like, could somebody bring me a stepladder? Because I can't even reach the puzzle pieces. That came out of nowhere. 100%.
John, no man is ever thinking about the timing of a challenge and how that factors into their win, I will tell you for a fact. But as someone who's hard on themselves, I get it. I get it. But no, there was no luck in those challenges. Anyway, I will go to my grave saying that. But I do think with Suntony, she's someone who, like, would other franchises cast Suntony? I don't know. Like, I remember seeing a personality like you, Jean, on the show, and I'm like, I don't feel like I've seen this archetype before. I don't feel like I've seen this character. And it's the same with Suntony, and you have similarities, but you're also very different. And that's what I loved about it. I was like, I don't think that this fits into a mold of what the US might, like, really stereotypically put into a mold of what, you know, Australia's going down to Bondi to the gym to get the personal trainer. Like, it's quite as, you know,
and to be honest with you, Shannon, I think my season, they took the chance. They were like, we've got to put interesting people on the beach. We've got to find somebody we've not seen on South African Survivor. Because we have played that game where we put pretty people on a beach. And I'll say it once, I'll say it a million times. Sometimes pretty people are not that interesting. And they did it in season 7 where they were like, okay, cool, bring me all of the beauty queens and we'll put them on Survivor. And
They put two literal beauty queens who knew each other from beauty pageant on the same tribe.
Steffi is Miss.
Oh, that's true. They put three beauty queens on the same tribe, and that tribe really did well.
Three beauty queens.
Yeah, there you go.
So
and Rob.
So I think and Rob and I was beautiful like, class. Okay, is there? And then Tani Letizu was giving me life.
Mm-hmm.
But they did again go, okay, let's put more pretty people on the beach, and then. I don't think that the characters were as dynamic as in my season and again in this season. So I think
we're not calling people ugly. You know, like everyone's good looking and everyone's interesting in their own way.
I think they lent a little bit more to people on a beautiful beach in Fiji. I think that they've gone back to finding that one or two characters who you like, wow. Yeah, you wouldn't normally see them in any other Survivor, and that's what makes it so interesting.
Mm. Yeah, I think this is just a lesson of when it comes to casting, don't try to fill a type. Don't cast to fill buckets to fit certain demos, because someone like Suntony does not check any box. She's a little bit in all a bunch of different boxes, but I mean, I'm just so happy she was on the show. I still say, even though we still have 3 episodes left, that she was the main character of this season. No slight 100%. To anybody else, but like she was from episode 3. She was the one that was determining basically the way that each vote went. As you were saying before, like she really seemed to be the conduit of so much information, whether it was stuff she was purposely giving away or unconsciously giving away. She had by far the most confessionals of anyone in the season so far. So she was one of the biggest characters. Like, she really is just one of the most unique castaways I have seen on Survivor in some time, in both her personality and her gameplay, the way her personality informs her gameplay as well. Right. We talked about this, about how honest she's been, that she's like, I don't feel good about this. And because I don't feel good about this, that means it's not good for my game. So I'm going to move forward. Like, while frustrating at times, it was really cool to see how that informs some things, because I think Survivor strategy 20 years on in the formula has gone to a point where you can play the game a bit robotically, you know, a bit methodically of, okay, we just split the vote here. We just vote here, and then we lead to success. And Suntony proves that, no, there is a human element involved. There are people involved. There are emotions involved. And I know she's earned some comparisons. I've seen it bandied about, like, is she the Abby Maria? Maybe more so in this episode, more so than the other ones, because basically everyone's saying, like, I don't want to get rid of Suntony, but I really don't want to put up with her anymore. That's very much from like Abby Maria in the Philippines. But my usual answer to that is no, because I think Suntony was a power player, and it was because not necessarily because she had strong feelings towards people, but because she used those strong feelings to inform the decisions that she wanted to make, and she had the power to be able to make those decisions.
There's also that I don't even know if I saw it or did it or felt it or whatever, but Suntony felt slighted by a lot of people, the way they spoke to her, the way they made her feel. And I mean, I know myself moving through the world that I get that in real life. And Santoni gets that in real life where, you know, we just, there's like a tone to it, like a Mean Girls. And I had that specifically in the first couple episodes when I was watching Santoni with the blondes and that alliance and the way that they spoke to Santoni. And I was like, not okay with this. And I'm so proud of her for actually being like, in the episode, acknowledging this is not how people talk to me. This is not something that I tolerate. And then going with that. And as you say, Mike, and being able to actually execute it. And one of the things that I said in my season was that when we went to vote, the person that I wanted to go home went home. And the same thing is happening the whole season with Santoni. Every time there was a vote, Santoni was like, I don't want to do this. I want to vote out Sean.
Yeah,
I don't want to do this. I need this person gone. And the whole vote would change. So she had sway. She had power. But as soon as somebody started speaking to her or like disrespecting her in a human way, not a game way, in a human way, she would be like, I'm not. Except right at the end there with Kieran and Tyson. She knew for a while that they were taking her for a ride and she never pulled the trigger. And she kept saying, there's a voice in the back of my head. And it's the first time that she didn't listen to that voice. And it got her in trouble. So I'm so proud of the way that she went into this game as an underdog. Even myself, who met her before, I was like, she ain't gonna last.
Yeah, she's got one episode.
Not, get her in trouble. Yeah. Not a chance. And that's what people thought to me. In my interview, a panel interview with like 10 or 12 people from Mnet, Henry said to me, one of the two said to me, okay, can you promise me you won't be the first voted out? I said to him, look, I'm either going to be the first or the last because my mouth's going to get me in trouble. My family didn't even think I would make it very far because of the way that I just say whatever I want and screw the consequences. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm so proud that Santoni did that and then still managed to put her foot down and say, I actually don't like the way you're speaking to me or treating me. So I'm going to do something about that. And that's something that I don't even think that I would sometimes even have the balls to like recognize it. I'm so used to it in real life.
Yeah. I mean, Santoni, even in this episode, I was like, I'm going to miss her so much. Just rewatching it. Like in this episode, in confessional again, always the fire confessionals by being like,
Don't say that word.
I know. I mean, she was like a lady on fire with the hair as well to go out and fire here. But even just talking about how Smash was being with the vote and then counting on her fingers. Well, now Nicole wants to do 3-1. Like, it was everything I was thinking, but she was saying it, and I was really grateful for that. And then even her reads, the whole episode was so great. She could tell there was something off with Tyson and Kieran, and she could tell there was something wrong with Smash. And I was like, this is such a good, you know, as every episode has been, but it really sums up how great Santoni has been. She's a great player, too. It's not just a character thing. It's not just an Abby Maria thing. Like, she's also a great player. And even a Jury Villa, it would have been really interesting if she got to the end, because they're saying she's the biggest player. And that's really fun and original that this archetype could be seen as Jury Villa as, like, the big game player. But they were also really frosty to her and really upset with her. So that is everything she was. Like, she was definitely emotional while being highly strategic. She was an incredible character. The eye rolls, great reads, great strategic understanding. And then sometimes she would lose it a little and then she would come back. But I just think like she, I would agree, was the main character of the season. Like we had so much fun with her. And I love that they cast her. I loved her in this episode. And I think she was on point. I think it was a lot of the chaos in the situation that made her go home here. And I don't think I put a lot of blame in this particular situation of that coming back on her. I mean, you could say, when they lost Inesu, they've been clawing since then, but I don't see anything she did wrong here.
Yeah, it's weird that Santoni says in her final words, like, oh, it was my big mouth that got me in trouble, because, I don't think that was the case. My still crackpot theory is that when Smash came back hat in hand to Kirid, they said, all right, we're just going to vote out Santoni tonight. Mm. But I would love to hear your thoughts, Jean, on what happened at Tribal Council, where Santoni, as much as we love her, gets called out on a bit of hypocrisy here. Right. And Nicole vocalizes it earlier, this idea of like you get angry at people, for sort of being flippant and turning on you. But then when you turn on people, you call yourself the victim and say, I made a deal with the devil. I don't want to do that. I mean, talk to me about that, because it seemed to be a real eye opening moment for Santoni. What were your thoughts on everything that happened there?
It's so interesting for me because that hypocrisy thing is something that threads its way through Survivor. And this episode, but more in the previous episode, when that hypocrisy came out where they were like, Chappies, you stole the sweets and how dare you, you cheating. And then Nico says, hold on a second, y'all. Did you take the meat? Did you take the meat? Did you eat the meat? Did you take the meat? Okay, so all of you broke the rules and now you want to come back on Chappies. Chappies did it for himself. You chose to share. So where is your moral compass spinning right now? Chappies did it for himself. That is smart survivor play. You went and shared with everybody. That's your own fault. So there is such a weird, like, moral dilemma that you're presented with when your feelings get hurt. And that's what it comes down to. When somebody lies to you, you're like, how dare you? You lie to me. But you've just told 8 lies on the way to tribal council. When somebody... I mean, it's so fascinating watching the season on the States, the Winners at War. Wow, what a season. Anyway, and when Sandra's like, if you say my name, I'm going to come for you. I mean, but like, you say people's names 3-4 times a day. And that's the problem with, well, not the problem, but it's the beauty to watch it on TV. But as a player, you're just, that's the problem watching it, because you're like, I'm such an idiot. Like, why am I getting upset about something I've just done 18 times in like an hour? And that's the problem, is that Santuni in the moment is doing stuff, but not realizing that she is also doing the same. I mean, people are doing the same stuff to her. She's doing the same stuff to them. But as soon as it gets turned on you, you do get emotional. You do play the victim because you feel bad. I mean, Vanna and I have had a long conversation about Rainier's response to being on the dodgy side of the Thai Destinies twist. And I kept saying, okay, cool, but like, did you do everything that you could have to avoid it? And I think he put too much faith in the fact that he had this great lie to tell at the end, which was not a great lie. And he stopped playing on the beach. He had loads of time to go and swing people, like Amy tried, but he did nothing. And then he sat at the end and was like, oh, I got dealt a bad hand, but you did nothing with the bad hand. You know, you can still win in poker with pocket twos, you know. You can take out ace king, but you have to play. You have to stay in the hand. And he didn't. And so I think there's this, like, you want to be a victim to a game that you love, that you know is filled with twists and turns. But as soon as it impacts you and you are the one at the tail end of it, you're like, oh, the game sucks. No, the game doesn't suck. Your reaction to the twist is what sucks. And it's just about emotions and feelings in the moment. And we're all human. We have it. We don't want to lose. We don't want to be made a fool of. We don't want to have our feelings hurt. And when it comes down to it, when somebody that you think you trusted then turns on you and you get to the jury and a big mature person can say, oh, I respect you for that gameplay. But a lot of people will have their feelings hurt and be like, I'm not going to give you R1 million for that. And that's the very essence of Survivor, is having to do horrible things to people and then dealing with horrible things being done to you. People like Rob, I think, just had that robot kind of way about them where those things didn't hurt their feelings. A lot of it has to do with being a woman as well, is we sometimes don't have control over the way we respond to things. And sometimes we don't realize that we've fallen back into a victim mindset. But it is natural because your feelings are hurt and that's where you want to go.
I think with Santuni, the difficulty was that the way that people were perceiving her, like, that was on her. The way that Nicole's talking about her to her brother, the way we've seen Kieran say, like, just baby her, all that, everyone was saying, like, now we're going to have to put up with her for a few more days. Like, she's making them feel that way, and she has to cop to that behavior. But at the same time, she was, in many ways, outplaying people. Like, look at the Shizzy chart. She was coming second. We were giving her a ton of points. So I think people were becoming cutful that it wasn't just that this was, like, this emotional person to manage, like an Abby Maria, which is difficult in and of itself. It was someone who was, like, emotional and difficult to manage in the game, because the gameplay was hard when it was against her, but it was also often outplaying you. So I think that they had to, like, kind of reconcile. Or I think if that's why anyone was upset, it was about the fact that she would get upset about gameplay, but then her gameplay was some of the best and the most ruthless, and they were like, it didn't really track, and it was hypocritical in its own way, and they probably just weren't there for that. It's like, look, either be difficult to manage but someone that I'm playing and using as a pawn, or be playing me but be like stone cold about it. But like, how are you doing both things? Like, neither of those things are good for me.
Right, yeah, it's this idea of her being like, oh, I really don't want to do this, as she's like, you know, gunning people down, like, oh, this sucks, I really, like, why am I doing this? And it's like, no. Basically, I think what Kieran said, right, was like, you can't be the victim and the predator. I think he's essentially saying either own it or be like, I really don't like doing this, let me not do it anymore. And I totally agree with you, Jean, that like hypocrisies exist in Survivor all the time. That's why seeing her in the final would have been really interesting. Not only because, as was pointed out in Ponderosa, a lot of people thought, maybe despite their personal feelings, she was playing one of the bigger games at that point. But we see this all the time. I'm thinking of Lee Carsonine as a big example from Australian Survivor. Like, if you're being confronted with, do you practice what you preach? How do you respond to that? I could imagine that Santini would get called out on it in a final tribal council situation. How would she respond to it? Would she be like,
I think it would be difficult for her.
It would be tough.
But again, the problem with this whole scenario is that you're assuming that she's aware of it.
Right.
I had the same issues, right? I got to the end and I was like, cool, I got here. Y'all should respect me. But I couldn't tell them why they needed to, because all they saw was this cocky, arrogant person going around doing what she wanted, not paying attention to anything else that was going in the game. And then now I needed their respect, when I didn't really care about the respect in the game. And now I'm asking for it out of, like, when they're sitting on the bench. And I did nothing to earn it in that moment. I was just like, oh, well, you know, if you don't think I should win, I don't, whatever. And I think it's very different when you watch it now at home. You have this beautiful edited version where, Santoni is struggling to watch it. She's like, I can't believe I did that. Same thing with me. Watching it for that many episodes was just like, what the hell? Is this who I am? So you're assuming that in the moment that she's aware that she is playing a victim, or she's feeling that way, or she's responding that way. But sometimes you're not, you don't see it. You just see people being mean to you, but you don't see yourself being mean back.
Yeah,
and then you watch it on TV and you're like, I'm a bitch.
Well, no, I mean, I do see that for Santini. Like, I think that she'd have these moments, and some she would see and some she wouldn't. And when she saw it, I think she was like, oh no. Like, one of my favorite Santini moments didn't even happen on the show. It was in the exit interview Mike did with Inesu, where we said, like, we asked about the fact that Santini had thrown Inesu under the bus, which was probably my least favorite move that she made in the game, because it was purely emotional. And then Inesu said she'd come to her and been like, I did something bad, you know, like, she copped to it because she'd realized that was bad. And I was like, in the moment, I couldn't control that was bad, but I'm like letting you know. And I think that that was something she could see, and maybe other times she couldn't always see it. But yeah, I think that it probably gets lost in all of that. But when there was some transparency there for her, I think she had quite a bit of self-awareness, and that was really fun to watch. And I don't think she's someone who is delusional about herself or doesn't really understand these things. Like, it doesn't surprise me that in watching it in hindsight, she's like, okay, that was too far.
You know, there was a moment in this episode that I think represented who Santoni was, is when she's talking to Nicole or somebody about Kieran finding the idol, and she goes, oh, it's to Anela. And so now Anela is just flipping, burnt Kieran's whole game down because he's telling her about the fact that they have an idol. And Santoni's response is, and I quote, oh, I'm so happy for him. Mm. And then in the confessional, it's like, oh, can't believe it. But that initial response, that's who Santoni was, because I can tell you, because she's very similar to who I am, that there isn't a filter. There wasn't a thought before that word came out. Oh, I'm so happy for him. That's who she is. In that second, she was like, oh, that's cool. Oh, sure. But no, actually, that's really bad for me. And that's what I love about Santoni, is she's actually this super caring person. I mean, I've been chatting to her off, you know, behind the scenes, and she's been supporting people in this game who have come out and been alienated by, you know, the viewers or whoever. She's a champion for the people who are underdogs, herself included. And that's, I just think she's a good human. And sometimes she's fumbling her way through, but she's still making it out at the right places, except for this one. But I mean, she has made some blunders. But again, as you said, we'll own up to them and be like, whoopsie doodles, that wasn't supposed to happen. But she's so human about it. That's what I love about her. She's the most She's the most human character and somebody who actually has a game bot mind about Survivor and the way that she views it and the way that she's able to see a lot of different sides to what's happening in the moment, but still has that human element, whereas a lot of the people in the game are like these crazy Survivor bots. She still comes and is like, oh, Isaac, no, which is like, oh, here I am. Just take it or leave it, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, let's also say there was an opportunity, a window of hope, even though she got the most votes here, that she wouldn't end up going home here. She nearly wins this fire making challenge.
Yeah, that wasn't a window. Tyson. That was a massive duel. That was I was so impressed with her.
I mean, I was incredibly impressed, especially for someone who, again, I think walked in as someone who was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm out here in the wilderness. Mm. The fact that she was able to go out making a fire, even though she lost. It's tough, though, for me, because, again, absolutely adore Santini. But I don't know how I would feel had she won this.
Thank you for saying that, because I was rooting for Tyson. Yeah. You know, we think the fire idol is broken. She got voted out. I was like, this is an exciting moment. But like, you know, you got voted out. It's time to leave now.
And also, not to mention, I do think it would have been incredible. Again and again and again, I will say it. If it was a final two of Santini and Chappie, it's for so many reasons. But part of me would be like, but how many advantages and twists ended up going their way to be able to get to that? You know, so I am happy that this was a very from like a we'll talk about the reward challenge stuff. But outside of that, like very straightforward episode in terms of the other stuff going on. No Immunity Island that, you know, it sucks to have Santini go out this way. But even if the fire making challenge didn't happen, she still would have been voted out proper.
One of the things I loved about that moment is the respect that she got from the jury in that moment. And I think that was something that really like got me in the throat was when they said, look at how well, you know, like they were all like, oh my God, look at her go. None of them thought that she had that in her. They all thought Tyson was going to like cakewalk that. And here, Santoni had a whole braai going before Tyson even had a little spark. And they were, I mean, we were all watching with like wonder about how he was chopping off his magnesium from the flint. Yeah. And I'm like, what are you doing, guy? This is not a tree. It just the whole thing was like Santoni, like it was such a great moment. And I'm okay with the way that she went out because she got so much respect. And I think from the viewers and the casual viewers at home who don't dissect it the same way we do, but maybe thought Santoni was a bit of a flip-flopper and didn't have respect for her. And for her to go out, like because the wind blew her flame a bit flatter and she didn't move the base of her fire to where it needed to be, and Tyson did, I think that for me, like tipped off a really great game, and she gained a lot of respect in that moment, I think.
Yeah, I mean, this was like best case scenario for me for it to be like a fun, exciting moment in the fire without it actually deciding the outcome. I mean, I think Tyson would have been really screwed to go here due to a fire challenge when he didn't get the most amount of votes and Nicole could just play it and not have to play it on any one person. Or, I mean, I would like to see the fire idol again. I just want it to be an idol. I would need her to actually play it on Santini, and if she's in the top two vote getters or the top vote getter, then it goes to fire rather than just being like a pure idol. I didn't like, as we've discussed, that it could be just something that plays that triggers a fire. Although I will say that something that's fun about it is I've realized, like, if you're in the majority and you're paranoid and you play an idol, nothing happens. You waste it. You won the vote. But in this world, you could play it. Like, it can't be wasted. If your ally won the vote, or you even won the vote, but you got the second most amount, like, you could send yourself to fire by accident. So that's like a fun little thing. But I still think I want to see it again like an idol. But I was happy here that, you know, Tyson could go out and come back into the game because he had not actually lost out on the vote. And I want to talk about Nicole in this episode, because once we're talking about the fire idol, Nicole was very fire idol happy. Like, she was like, came to play this thing, which, you know, it would be a big move. I think she was thinking probably about resume points on that, to the point where it's like, should we do a simple split vote, or should we do a 3-2-1 where instead of just winning the vote on the revote, we'll go to fire? It's like, and that's why I love Santini in this episode as well, is that she's like, you know, with her fingers, and we're like, that makes no sense. And Santini basically says the same.
And then you go home, Nicole.
Yeah. Then you make a fire.
Exactly.
When we
like,
put out the numbers.
They create this 3-2-1 where I go home automatically. Well, so here's
the
thing.
Can we talk about the fact that they like were weighing up whether to do a 2-2-2. They're like, the revote is better than fire. It's like, yeah, I think so.
That showed me in that moment that Santoni is operating with those players, not necessarily Kieran and Tyson. Let's put them in the same league. But Santoni is literally operating with people who thought that those were good ideas. I can imagine how frustrated she must be at this point.
Well, so let's talk about her choice, though, because I've seen some people be like, why did she do that? I know that Tyson, you know, does his little like, you know, taunting. Oh, Nicole, you shouldn't have done that. But I 100% see why she did it, because of what Kieran does at Tribal Council. You know why she ends up playing the fire idol is because Kieran outs this plan and Anella reveals this plan to be like, hey, you know, the votes were initially going to be on Nicole and then I made this plan and now I'm flipping back. I would be incredibly paranoid that that means that I'm going in that moment. And if that's the case, like, you better play that idol to give yourself a second chance. So I don't think it was to, like, save Santoni or Tyson or anything.
No.
I 100% think Nicole played it because she thought the votes would be coming onto her and she wanted to give herself a second chance.
But, like, either way, she did give Santoni the chance and Santoni was her ally and she'd lost the vote. But, like, okay, so one of two things happened here and we need to, again, go back to the theories. Because she votes for Kieran. Like, she throws a vote on Kieran. So it was like, either what you did was you just voted as you thought you were going to vote before, you split the vote with Smash, who's being shown to have flipped on you, thinking he might still vote with you even in the chaos, like, how are you splitting the vote? And then it's just that simple plan, in which case that would be really, really bad. Or you feel like this is going in a poor way, and as such, you need to split the vote so you can play the fire idol, so that if Kieran plays an idol, there are two targets to make fire, and you've thrown a vote on Kieran, so he might have to make fire, or if he plays the idol on Tyson, he's making fire. If he doesn't, Tyson's making fire. So we need more targets than that to make fire. I don't know which one it is, because one is like big brain, right? One is like, okay, we need to split a vote, and she does then play the fire idol, which hadn't been the plan, so maybe. Or the other is like so simplistic that even in this chaos, you vote for Kieran and split, despite the fact that Smash has like vocally flipped away from you. So I don't know. I could go either way on this.
I think it's that option. I think, to be completely honest with you, I don't think Nicole is operating at the level where she was 100% picking up what was being put down, even though it was pretty plain language. And I think that when she walked into Tribal Council, she was going to play the idol and she had it. She wanted to play it. Didn't matter who was going
to
be voted.
She wanted to be
like, I had it and I'm going to play it. I'm not going home with this in my pocket. And I think that, you know, that's credit to her. She didn't really know what's happening. And you know what I found interesting, and maybe we didn't get it in the edit, but there was no jostling, as we mentioned that before, but there wasn't any whispering. There wasn't any.
I know.
Like,
US Survivor, Santoni, Chappies, and Nicole are getting into a group to be like, clearly everything has changed. If we are playing the fire idol is what it should be called. Are we working out? Yeah, like, it just makes sense. But are we working out where the votes are going? Like, that's what makes me confused. It's like, are you just going with the original plan, but then playing the fire idol for jury points? Because, like, okay, I lean to that. Because I think that's simplistic and, like, Nicole, God love her, but, like, she chose all of them to go to the water park. I'm a bit like, maybe you're going with that plan. Or is she just like, thinking, the big brain thing where she splits the vote so that the fire idol that she's now playing, like, is she working through the math and Tribal Council? Like, she could be. It does actually make sense. It is the right move if you're going to play the fire idol. I just don't know that I can credit that, but I do think US Survivor, those three have stood up and had a little powwow about the fact that, like, Smash flipped. Kieran's calling him out. Like, can we talk about how everything is different right now and we should work out what we're doing? But, like, in Survivor South Africa, they're like, okay, well, I guess I'll just keep voting for Kieran. Like, what? No.
All right, I'm going home. Let me lie down. Like, but I thought it was interesting that nobody just turned to Kieran and Tyson said, you've just told us this whole thing. So we're going to vote for Smash right now. And you guys can choose to be in on it. And this can genuinely be a very straightforward vote. Or we can go to a fire idol and make things very complicated and perhaps somebody goes home that shouldn't go home.
Yeah.
I mean, there were so many arguments to be made, so many pitches to put out there. And we, you know, this was all like, I'm going to stick with my 2-2-2 votes and vote Kieran, even though this whole thing literally just exploded.
I agree.
That was fascinating to watch. And this is why the end game is so interesting to watch. You know, it sucks that in the US version, the final six, final five, final four rounds essentially get fast forwarded in 1 3-hour episode, is because these are oftentimes when the most pivotal decisions are made. Like, each and every person had a role to play in this episode. And I feel like if a lot of this got sort of like edited over, we would have missed out on so much interesting stuff. Like you said, the questionability of what Nicole is doing and what she's thinking, though, you know, it does make me also think about her jury chances as well. As Anella points out, she does have those Zomba votes on the jury. She also has this, you know, that positivity of like, well, listen, I didn't vote you out, so that means you don't have any ill will against me. But also, I didn't vote you out, so how in on the game was I?
Yeah.
Next round, it seems like she's going to be essentially forced to work with Chappies. I wonder if that's going to help her reputation in that moment. Because, yeah, I think right now, if Smash is the one with the least winner equity, I don't know. I think it's despite the Zomba contingency. I think Nicole might be second worst at this moment.
I would agree. And I think it's with this jury. Like, I think there are a ton of juries where it's very relationship-based. Mm. It's such a legitimate way to win, to not really be in power, but to have so many friends, and you're the last one to get picked off, and you sit there, and you've been the underdog, and you win. And that's still a viable path for her. But I think with this jury, even her Zomba friends are, like, gamers. And I think it'll matter to them that, like, the other people made bigger moves, possibly, and also, like, that they see her as someone, like, you know, sweet, lovely Nicole for sure. But again, she did take them all to the water park, and it did doom two of them. So, like, that might be in their mind.
She was nice, man.
Yeah, it was because she was nice, but unstrategic. And does this jury care about
her? It's in her family, right? It's in her family. Her brother's helping Kieran find an idol. Like, they're just a very nice family.
They've been raised right. But I think her game can be summed up with the way she described it
to her
brother.
With the way she took them all to the water park. Can't get her friend.
Yeah, but also she said to her brother,
I'm having so much fun.
And in a game that is as tough as it is, Nicole is sitting on the beach tanning and living her best life in a hot tub, eating all of the food, drinking the champagne, and literally landing with her bum in the butter. So honestly, I think that sums up her game. It's like, I'm having so much fun. Let me play the fire idol and see what happens. And then vote my 2-2-2 that we originally had planned.
I want to be the kind of person who looks at life that way, because I'm kind of someone who's anxious. I overthink everything, you know, as I'm saying, like, I'm trying to think on, you know, and it's crippling. Well, I want to live my life like, I'm having fun. Let's play the fire idol. That's my new mantra. Thank you so much, Sean. Yes. Let's just play the fire idol, and that's going to be, and it was the right move. Things work out.
Yofio, you only fire idol once.
Yes, that's what I want to do. I just want to be going to water parks, playing fire idols.
I have it. I'm going to play it.
So,
speaking of Nicole's brother, should we talk about the family visits? Because obviously this is a really interesting version of it. First, I can't believe they did a family visit during a freaking pandemic. But I guess good on the Survivor team for being able to mitigate that they did not flat out shut down the game at final six because they brought in six people from the outside world.
I mean, this was something I was concerned about before they went out there. I was like, that could be a disaster. As far as I'm aware, they did quarantine for at least a while. I don't know if it was like 2 weeks, but it was a significant
Somebody
amount of time.
In my live, I feel like it was about 5 days, 4 days.
Oh, I
somewhere
thought it was like
eight
days or so. But like they quarantined, they tested.
I think that's why for me it was quite interesting to see who came. Because I was expecting, for example, Nicole's boyfriend or
husband,
Santoni's partner. But I'm also guessing that you would have to find somebody in the family who could
who
just
loves
you,
you
know, disappear for 7 days and be like,
hard.
Okay, work. Hi, I just need some leave in the middle of the pandemic.
Well, but the thing is that, like, when you go out to, say, Fiji from the US, like, in terms of, like, two-day travel time on, like, either side, like, you're probably gone for as much time. At least it was in South Africa. It takes you, like, half a day to travel, and then you quarantine. I don't know that it was that much more, but I did like that they all got to hang out with their families because they had quarantined, and that is a lot. And it is a pandemic, and you probably want to, like, let's not forget that we are playing Survivor in a pandemic. Like, let's let them hear from home. Let's let, you know, obviously Chappies won, but, like, hear from his pregnant wife, that's important. I didn't, you know, in terms of the challenge twist, I didn't mind it being like a two-part challenge and like two-part immunity, yeah. which it almost was. I just feel like they should have told them it was it. Like even with Kieran, he immediately yeah. goes, I'm like, part of me is like, is Kieran throwing this because you throw the loved one's challenge possibly? Like, I just feel they should know what they're playing for. And yes, like perhaps, they assumed yeah. and that's on them, but you just be transparent about the fact that like you're all getting your families, but this is a two-part immunity challenge that your families are watching and just be clear about that.
Yeah, yeah, this was the first time this season that I think production did a rug pull of like the, because I would imagine they had assumed, okay, if you win the challenge, if you win this challenge, you're the only one who gets a loved one's visit. And so from that perspective, you just mentioned it, Shannon. I think a common wisdom among Survivor fans is like, don't win that, because when you are the arbiter of other people's fates, when it comes to seeing like this incredibly important piece of home, you're going to have people pissed off at you. And that's not going to help your game either way. And so I could see a world where people threw it only to be like, oh, well, actually, Chappies, the reward that you won is to, you know, is to be able to decide who competes in the next challenge. I think a way you dumb it down, or at least maybe, you know, dissimulate it a little bit, maybe just do like you're competing for an advantage in the next immunity challenge, or even like you can assign a disadvantage to someone or two people in the next immunity challenge. I think I like that more than just, hey, you pick who gets to compete alongside you. Cause I know that had someone like Tyson won and Chappies is forbidden to compete in the immunity challenge, the fan base would be up in arms about it.
Yeah, true. I find the thing about throwing a challenge is like such a, like an analytical thing to talk about, because in that moment, I don't know with, I mean, okay, certain players, perhaps Kieran is probably the only one.
You know, he's thinking about it. You know, he's thinking about it.
But he's the only one.
Yeah.
If you saw Tyson's reaction to seeing his buddy, if you saw Chappies and you felt that, there's no way that, Chappies wouldn't throw anything because he knows he's got to win everything, even this challenge. But if I think back to my season, the biggest player we had, Vander, who might have also had those kind of, I might throw this. There's no way in that moment when his wife, Shanae, walked out onto the beach and the man crippled, that a thought glimmered in his brain that said, maybe you should throw this. There's so many things that happen in that on that day, because also you're doing the maths and you're going, okay, we're about at that stage when perhaps, you know, in any other normal season, it would be the loved one's challenge. And so you're kind of on these like weird emotional tenterhooks waiting for that big moment. And a lot of people play the game to get to the loved one's challenge, which is weird to me. Why do you not try and get to the end? But anyway, some people are just like, I want to get to the loved one's challenge. I want to get to jury. Okay, fam. But when that moment comes and that real, real emotion, I mean, you are starved. And these people were in isolation for like 2 weeks before the game even started. So they are so starved of that like love and attention and unconditional love. And one of the things for me that was so stark in this game was that you can trust somebody. Here's somebody in front of you who doesn't want anything from you, doesn't need anything from you, who's not going to stab you in the back. This is unconditional trust. And for a second, you let the paranoia, I mean, you even see Santoni says, I've never seen Tyson smile. I mean, that is a lot to be in game mode. And all of a sudden you lift the facade and the real Tyson comes out. And I'm actually really impressed with how well he's managed to maintain that composure for so long, because that loved one's challenge rips all of your plans to shreds. And there's all this thinking that you can do, but when your family member or your bestie walks out there and you're like, oh my God, here I am in this moment I've watched for bajillion seasons on TV. Logic and gameplay besides Kieran.
But not for Kieran. That's the call.
For everybody else but Kieran.
I mean, I don't know if Kieran threw. I mean, like, he was out, like, I think maybe one of the first. But he might have just, you know, screwed up in the challenge. I did go back and Nico says, you win the reward. He never said what it was. So if they assume they did make an ass out of you and me, so that's on them. But I just would have liked more transparency. But I do think, like, I loved the loved ones challenge. I know these people. Like, I've been talking about these people for too many hours for me to want to count. And like, it got me. And Chappie is, you know, I've even messaged a bit with Chappie's wife. She seems like a lovely woman. And like in every interaction they've had, because he got the letter and the video, as we remember, and here, like, there's like, she's pregnant, and like, there's just a lot of love there. Like, that's, you know, and we had siblings come in, which is, you know, emotional for me. I'm obviously trapped for my family and stuff. But like, you know, he comes out to his partner and with the baby, it just, it got me.
Cole immediately calls him out on stealing food, like, which was incredible.
Like, not in front of the poor child.
Oh, he does that. I love that.
I love that. And also makes me feel like, oh man, like Chappie's would be the best and worst person. Because he's like loyal as a dog, but if he's like squirreling away food from the pantry, he must be the worst person to shop for.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder with these like big survivor characters, like, what's it like to be married to you? Like, I remember with Luke, like, seeing on Instagram, he'd like, his wife posted on Instagram that she'd found all of these like post-it notes like apologizing to her for some like silly little thing that he'd done, and I'm like, that does feel like what it would be like to be married to Luke. Like, what is it like to be married to Chappie's? As I said, this woman like clearly like loves him with her whole heart, but like, it must be a bit of a roller coaster. It must be a bit of a show all the time to be Mrs. Chappie's. Yeah, well,
John, you experienced that with Tom,
favorite,
right?
Where you think of
Nico's like, oh, who are you wearing to?
Yeah,
no, my thoughts that keep me up at night was Martinez's wife.
I didn't know Martinez was married.
Forget Tom. Tom, I understand. I've met his wife, Nikki. She's as Tomish as you could be as a woman.
Oh my
but
gosh,
Martinez's wife, that's somebody who fascinates me.
And I love
but
it.
But they are lovely people, though. I mean, it's fascinating. These people manage to find in a world with so many human beings and souls. I mean, Chappie's found his person.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely incredible to see. And it kind of, you know, when Chappie's first came onto the show, and I had the same opinion of him, and Shannon and I messaged you to say, oh, he's got a lot of tendencies that remind me of Martinez. And it is that Afrikaans male, like coming from a smaller town, maybe mentality, where some of the language that they use is a little problematic. And I know a lot of the castaways had exactly the same response to him. Anesu was one of them. And I know that Santuni had to push Anesu to give this guy a chance. And once she did, she was like, oh, okay, actually, he is problematic, but he's still a good human. And that's what I love about Survivor. It actually forces you to talk to people and try and understand who they are, because I don't know where they find some of the people. Because I'm like, what do you do for a living? Who ties your shoes in the morning? Like, I don't understand.
You're a person.
No.
Yeah.
You're a that's whole amazing. Human, and that's the moment I realized that common sense and like morals and standards is 100% subjective, because your background and your upbringing, especially in the South African context, is so different. And I just find it fascinating that Chappie's can come into a game and just blunder his way for the first few weeks and manage to etch his way into a lot of these players' hearts. That's why I think if Chappie sits at the end, he wins, hands down, because there's so many people, even though he stole their food. Nicole's laughing about it. She didn't take it badly. He managed to get through that as the hero. How did that happen?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think this challenge also came at a perfect time. This is going to be a big throwback, but it reminds me, in the final five of Survivor Borneo, there was like all-time high tensions for that season. Like, Sue and Kelly were bickering at each other on the beach. You know, all the pagongs were gone. Everyone was just tired of each other. And they have this reward challenge where it was the mud collection challenge, where you just throw yourself into the mud at this mud volcano, collect enough as much as possible. And everyone said it was exactly what they needed. They had such a great time. They were able to like blow off some steam, almost like cathartically take out their aggressions on the mud. We sort of got that version here. The loved ones were the mud in that regard, where I think despite the most emotionally charged night of the game so far, that previous night, I mean, Chappie's walks in right and tells Nico, like, I feel broken at the moment. This sucks right now. I think to have the loved ones come in, for everyone to just like joke around with each other, to like get to know these people, to really have a fun time, including that Nicole moment that we just mentioned, I think showed how necessary that was. That yes, maybe it does cause people to get love drunk and make odd moves and then go back on said odd moves and have people play a little more oddly. But I think that was exactly what the doctor ordered in that moment, considering everything that happened the previous night.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, when our insurance gets involved, everyone's extremely happy. Like, everyone gets way too much. And it was, I mean, it was great to see, you know, these, where these people come from. We've heard so much about, like, Santini's sister, for example, and how she's really driven some of her strategy. As I said, we met Mrs. Francois Chappie's Water Swim Chapman. We met Junior Francois Chappie's Water Swim Chapman. I assume they called him Water or Swim. I assume they can name as well as you, Mike. So
no, I'm assuming they named the baby Santini.
Really?
or Inesu, actually, considering that Chappie's loves to yell things like, this baby is for you, Inesu!
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. I think that a boy. Does Inesu work for a boy? No, I'm not going to ask you. You're like the worst person to ask about naming things. But I do want to get to the sponsors, because most of what I loved about this was OutSurance. But before we do, should we get to the chizzy? Because this was a difficult week for the chizzy. Because there was a lot of people doing things wrong. And, okay, let's see how we can do with this. Take it away, Jacob. Take a Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3.
Okay, I'm going to go first because... So I can do some significant math. Mike, I can tell by your pained screams that this was a difficult week for you.
I don't know.
Well,
Well,
then you're going to make you go first.
You're going to make me go first?
Yeah, now I am, now that you've seen pain.
Oh, right? This is torturous. This is the opposite of a loved one shed, and I feel bruised. Okay. All right.
I love that. I was about to go first, and then you seemed so uncomfortable that I was like, well, let's explore that.
All right. So, okay. I'll go 3-2-1 here. I'm going to give 3 points to Kieran. It was not perfect. It was far from perfect. I think he is setting himself up to be in a position where Smash flips at 5. So I think he could also be able to convince Chappies and Nicole next week to be like, pull the Christy Smith, right? To be like, hey, let's just vote out Smash and do like a 2v2, fight it out at the final four or what have you. But I think he made a really good case for himself at the end in front of the jury. I think he really came alive there. He was able to vocalize a lot of what people were thinking. He was able to make a big grandstand with this idol. And at the end of the day, he was able to keep himself safe and his closest allies safe as well. Yes, that fire idol came into play, but like he was able to survive the day despite a target being on his back. I'd have to imagine that, you know, something off screen about him being able to placate Smash and say, let's just vote out Santini, kept him safe throughout that round. So even though it was far from the best gameplay he has ever done, in fact, maybe some of the worst, I'm going to give 3 points to Kieran here because I think he was really the mover and the shaker in this episode. I'm going to give 2 points to Tyson. I know Kieran was the more outspoken one, but I think Tyson winning that fire challenge is yet another tick in that box of, yes, I know we're not necessarily talking about resumes, but I think really continues this narrative of like Tyson being this scrappy fighter, especially with him and Kieran losing out on Warda. That's the first time he's lost this entire merge. And I think he's been able to show of like, you can't get rid of me. You thought it's an easy thing to do, but like, look at what I can do. I think it was really an impressive show in front of the jury. And I think this is the first time I'm doing this. I'm giving a chizzy point to the person who goes here. I'm giving a chizzy point to Santini. She had the logic. She had the right move to do here. It's not her fault. I guess I don't think that Smash ends up, you know, defying her and going against it. But like she had the correct math, the correct logic here. This is what you do. There is one idol between Tyson and Kieran. If you don't know who the idol is going to be played on, if you have 4 votes, split it 2-2-2. That's what happens in Survivor San Juan del Sur between John Mish and Jacqueline. Like, this is the factually correct move to do. And the fact that she was able to suggest that and nearly come back into the game via the fire idol, I think deserves some kudos. It only loses points because she is obviously not on the winning side of the vote nor the fire idol. So that those are my points. It's again, nobody played optimally in this episode. I love it. My favorite types of Survivor seasons to watch are those who play like messy but competitive. But there's a real emphasis on mess in this episode.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I agree with a lot of that. I mean, not the Kieran stuff at all. I feel like Kieran getting points for me is, I feel like just going against smashing the tribal council could have been so disastrous and was not the right read. There's a world in which he just comes back and is silent about it and just stews on it, where Tyson doesn't even need to go to fire because Nicole just thinks that the plan is maybe going ahead and the chaos doesn't trigger her to play her fire idol. And it could have gone even worse if Smash doesn't vote with them. And we're saying it is kind of crazy that he did end up voting with them. So I can't with the Kieran stuff. The rest I do understand, because as you're saying, people did a lot wrong in this episode, and I think that the cheesy points for me are going to come down to mostly, like, the people we spoke about the least, because we spoke about a lot of things that were being done wrong. But I will give 3 points to Tyson. I feel like of the people who voted out the eliminated player, Smash, Kieran, and Tyson, he didn't do anything wrong like the other two. He saved himself in fire, which shouldn't have even really, I don't even feel it was his fault to go to fire. I feel like that's quite an, as I said, an unfair twist, and also it was more other people around him making mistakes like Smash and Kieran. So I do think there's an off-screen thing where his connection with Smash could have been important in Smash looking back. So that's 3 points for me. I will give 2 points to Chappies. I feel as well, like, he probably did, like, the second least wrong. Like, he didn't win the vote. He does lose Suntony. But challenges are his plan A, as he said, and he did win 2 of them. Easy choice, obviously, for who to play in the immunity challenge, but he definitely, like, did it right. And another thing that I really liked from him is that he handled the conversation about splitting really well. Like, he says, Nicole, you're on the chopping block, you decide. And I really liked that, like, putting it in her court and just making her feel heard. So I'm giving him 2 points. And then I will give, as well, 1 memorial point to Suntony, who goes home here, but as we've said, didn't seem to be hugely her fault, mostly due to chaos, and she's on point in confessional, her reads were on point, speaking for us all, and it is not a question that she was right, splitting the vote. When we have 4 people against 2, we don't pile on and hope for the best. We don't leave it to luck. We definitely don't do 3 versus 1 and play a fire idol. That makes no sense. You know what we do? We split the vote. It's 2 and 2 and 2. If you can do it on 2 hands, it's easy enough math for Survivor. And Suntony knew that, and for that she gets a point. So I'm giving her my point. And John, who are you giving points to?
Like, I want to give all my points to Suntony, because that for me was the standout mental thought, like an actual thought that was the good thought, and it was a solid thought, and it was a plan that actually worked. Everybody else kind of were just, wow. This cheesy point at the moment is about who didn't screw up. Yes, and Suntony didn't screw up at all in this episode. Not one thing. She even got happy when she was told that Kieran found an idol. Oh, I'm so happy for him. So, I mean, I love her. So I can't give all my points to her, but I'm going to give her the 2.
2 points.
Because,
or 3.
2 points. Yeah, I want to give her 2 points at least, because I think I haven't been able to score for the whole season. So I'm going to give her for the whole season, because I think that she's been the best character that we've seen on TV. She's been narrating this whole season. She must be tired. So she gets a chisel point for that. And then, she gets 2. I'm going to have to give 3 to Tyson as well, just because he also, by elimination, didn't screw up as bad as everybody else. And then, no.
I love that you're going in a 2-3-1 direction. This is very interesting.
Ooh, I like, really shaking things up. I love
spinning,
it.
I also, Kieran, for me in this episode, his emotions got the better of him. But I do want to also acknowledge Chappies. I think for me, Chappies did a real good job at remedying the disaster that he found himself in the last episode. I think it was the loved ones. I think it was his response to Nicole's chirp about stealing the food. He came out scot-free from all of that. I found that fascinating. And he's still kind of lovable, so I'm here for him. And I thought he made a great choice. It was an easy choice for him to make about who to go up against in the immunity challenge. But he did it. He still smashed it. By the edit, it looked quite close. And he managed to bring it out when it matters most. And these are the challenges that matter the most. So he gets my last point.
So you're giving 3 to Tyson, 2 to Suntony, and 1 to Chappies. Mm. And that puts the charts at Kieran is now on 46. With Mike, you gave him 3 points, really? All right.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Well, because of all the reasons I previously stated. But anyway, Suntony got 4 points in her boot episode, and that will put her at 43 for the season. What an effort. Incredible job, Suntony. Love that. Tyson will win the... Yes, definitely. Tyson wins the Chizzy for the week. He got 8 points, so he is on 37. And Nessu was left on 26, and now her friend's been brought up to the same level. Operation Destiny, Chappies goes on 26 with our points. Rania was left on 15. Carla on 14. Amy on 12. Smash is still on 6. Nicole is on 3. Wardo was left on 2. Dino on 2. And Sean and Marisha on 1. And those are the current points. So it was a tough week. It was definitely like, yeah, what are we doing with this? You know, there was a lot of like, can you please give Smash 3 points and then take away 3 points? Can you give Smash 3 points and take away 100 points? Can you give Smash 3 points and then never, you know, take it away and then take away all the Chizzy points you've won before? No, that's not how the Chizzy works, guys.
I was going to say the answer to all that is yes.
That's exactly what I think. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, definitely. Like, yes. It was in the course of the episode, of course, I was like, oh my God, all the Chizzy points to Smash. So like in my mind, yes, the process of that happened. But if you guys want to give Chizzy points like that, and just cause anarchy. You can do 2-3-1 as well. We can all be confused about it. I am raffling off my Chizzy points, my most prized possession, on the Australian Survivor podcast. For those of you who are watching Australian Survivor, for the finale podcast, I'm raffling off my Chizzy points. You will get to designate the Chizzy points, send in audio about why those are your Chizzy points. It will feature on the charts. It is for Flick's charity for dementia research. $10 a raffle ticket, and we have currently sold 61 tickets. So that is $610. Nice. And that closes nice. On
That's
Sunday
a million
night.
Rand.
Yeah, that's a lot.
How many Nikos?
That's like 6,000 Rand. That's like pretty good. I'm actually really
yeah,
happy about
pretty
that.
Pretty decent, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, look, if you're a South African, it will be 100 Rand a ticket, which is quite a lot. But if you're American, it's like $7. So think about it like that and help us contribute to this amazing cause. Thank you, everyone who's donated. But just wanted to put that in for the people that are watching both franchises that were doing something a little fun with that, imploding the Chizzy for a good cause. So that is the Chizzy this week. And now let's talk about Outsurance. The Biostrat Variety Hour. Take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and the U.S. Army Blues.
And now it's the Biostrat Variety Hour with your hosts, Shannon Goss.
I don't know what I was expecting.
And Mike Bloom. Biostrat is still
oh
delicious.
My God.
Why was it so thick?
One.
Okay. Outsurance. We're all getting an out bonus in talking about Outsurance. So I want to list what I loved about Outsurance here. Firstly, everyone saying out bonus with a completely straight face. How are they doing that? That's a ridiculous word. It's not a word. It's out bonus. So I love that. The Outsurance towels or blankets. Now, I know that Outsurance is not in the branch anymore, but I will put them back in if I could get my hand on that beautiful picnic blanket Outsurance.
Ooh, your vote can be bought, Shannon? Is that what you're implying?
This whole thing is about sponsors. Ooh. Like, I can 1,000,000% be bought. Like, that's always been the case. I'm selling off my Chizzy points. I have no integrity.
Out of context account, please state that right now.
For sure. I love Kieran being super meta about the sponsors. Like, that was, I should give him Chizzy points just for that. He was like, when there's a sponsor, usually there's, and like, yeah, with Outsurance. Outsurance is the sponsor that gives away too many things. Yes, Kieran, good job on like analyzing the sponsors. And yeah, the fact that Outsurance just always has these overpowered rewards, and now that's their thing. I just love this reward so much.
Yeah, I love that because I think, I mean, the one that I can really think of is in Island of Secrets, right, when they went into the Biostrath Cafe and
what a day.
Meryl had to find that idol behind the immunity tile.
So good.
Like, that's, I'm assuming that was what was at the forefront of Kieran's mind. So I love the fact that, yeah, here's this weird, like, I don't know, if Outsurance had a shop, like, this is the sign that would be hanging outside of it, like they were in some sort of colonial village. I love that he had to look there, and that's the place where it was.
Mm-hmm. This was so good. Jean, were you ever, like, trying to game the sponsors when you were on the show?
Guys, you give me too much credit. In the game. You know what? When I was watching it, I was so surprised at how, like, just not present I was when there was time to be thinking about the game, where I was just, oh, food, or, oh, this, oh, something shiny. I just could not, for the life of me, you know, keep my head in the game long enough to think that deep. And that's why I really take my hat off to the people who do, because I'm like, there are burgers there. And you, I mean, okay, let's admit that Outsurance is not exactly the most low-key logo to ever sit in the jungle. But I just, yeah, no, I wouldn't have been one to see it. I like to think I would have, but I'm sorry, my honesty comes through and there's no way. I'm not sure I would have left the beach, though. So that would have been my thing, is he would have had to find it in front of me because Lord knows I wasn't leaving the food table.
Would your loved one have been helping him is the question, because that's now the question is...
100% no, because my loved one was as short as I am. Yeah, he would have contributed zero.
Is that a way to break the loved one's challenge in future seasons? Like, all right, I got to find the tallest person I know in my life, and I've got to bring them in just in case there are idols and trees.
That moment was just so interesting. So I always watched the episode twice. When I went back to watch it, but like your sister standing right next to you.
Yeah.
Surely. I mean, and she's wafer thin. You could have put it on your own damn shoulders. But no, you decide your man bits needs to be at the back of another man's head to get the, like, there were so many things that went through my head. Like, why? You also still had whatever he was drinking or eating in his hand. Like, it was just a fun thing to watch. I really enjoyed that moment.
I just can't wait for when I come out for season 43 and Jeff Probst goes, Mike, here's your loved one, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. because I'm going to become his friend so that I can use him to get to high places.
Also, he was like, I'm in an alliance with your sister, which was like, they were in like a light four, loose four. But I was like, if Chappies wins immunity and sends Santini, like, you're sending Nicole home. So like, even at that point, it was like, you're not, and even later on, when he could get rid of Santini, he still chose to go against Nicole. That's why it was so cold-blooded and I loved it. But at least Nicole's brother got to be a part of an idol play. It was an idol play that could have screwed over her game, but not a lot of loved ones get to say that. So he really was winning. Like, who says he might be rooting for Kieran? Kieran's a nice guy. Maybe he's on Team Kieran now.
Ooh, yeah,
I mean, even Peter has like a resume.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there a sibling rivalry going on here of like, I never liked Nicole anyway. I want this guy Kieran to win. He'll
find
the
golden
idol.
Child. Well, not anymore. I guess you're getting idled out by Kieran, Nicole. This is a fun one because we did get a question. Nick Fishman says, where does helping a different loved one get an idol rank in most questionable things ever done by a non-player on Survivor? And the example that always comes up is that Brian Lake's wife pointed out that he had lost the challenge when it wasn't necessarily seen. And it did turn out that they were divorcing. So maybe something's going on, you know, like maybe there's some sort of family drama, but look, it wasn't great. It wasn't great. I can understand how like Nicole took them all to the water park and then Peter helped Kieran find the idol. I see the family resemblance. I do.
Clearly not a very strategic,
a lovely family.
The most helpful family. Send them off to the soup kitchen. I want to, they seem like the most humanitarian survivor family
They're
to ever play
nice.
The game.
Yeah. Like, that's the problem.
You know who deserves chizzy points? Peter and Nicole's parents, because they did a hell of a job
Nicole's
raising
parents.
Really nice humans.
No, I totally
humans.
Agree.
But
those are
I
some
mean,
good kids, not great survivor players, but some great kids that you
no,
got there.
Exactly, sure. Absolutely nice people.
100% agree. Well, Twitter was doing some stuff this week. Mahindra said, "Nothing like spending time with your loved ones to get your spirits back up again. What's the longest you've gone without seeing a loved one?" Now, I like this because I was like,
read the room.
I was like, this is depressing. I was like, glad you asked, Mahindra. I'm trapped in the prison of my state. It is currently locked down. It is a pandemic. Like, I like that they're trying to engage with the fans and be fun, but this is incredibly depressing, Mahindra. Like, read the room for sure.
So sad.
That's bad.
Because you've gone without being a loved one. And why?
What devastating
story. Why am I military spouse?
What possible reason could you have for not seeing a loved one right now?
Yeah, that's a fun thing to ask people in 2021, Mahindra. Fresh Drop, something is going on because they have really stopped live tweeting. I'm genuinely concerned about them. Fresh Drop, reach out if you're okay. But they just, like, they posted the preview and then said, girl, with a lot of U's, wasn't last week enough? And I'm like, what is this?
What?
Maybe they're tired.
Oh, sorry. They said, girl, wasn't last week enough? That's what they said. Do you need it again?
But the preview, remind me, the preview was of Anella and Chappies getting in an argument, right, after Tribal Council?
Yeah, it might have been Tyson and Chappies arguing. I didn't watch the preview. I was really focused on the girl, wasn't last week enough? So I was just, I don't know what's going on with Fresh Drop.
Yeah, that's sort of part of, like, there's an account on Twitter, I think, called, like, Brand Saying Bay, where it's, like, various corporate accounts trying painfully to be modern and using, like, all these mimetic phrases. And this is very much in that category of, of a brand going, girl.
Girl, that's what they said. Ooh. Yeah. So I don't know what Fresh Talk is doing. Wild Coast Sun continued to be Miss Congeniality. They said, thanks to OutSurance, the contestants enjoy an afternoon of good food and great company, a wonderful way to boost morale towards the last few weeks of the competition. I just want to remind everyone that no brand was there for Wild Coast Sun during their cool reward. They all just jumped on the bandwagon, tried to use it for themselves, and Wild Coast Sun continues to be so supportive. Easily the nicest.
Wow.
Maybe they are the brand that was raised by Nicole and Peter's parents.
Wait, could Nicole and Peter's parents be running? Could they own the Wild Coast Sun?
They have to be. There's no other explanation.
Wait, that's how they got such a great deal on it.
Yeah, you're right. It must be what it is. No wonder he could come. He was just like there running reception. They're like, oh, come for the loved ones visit.
take five.
He's already in quarantine. Yep.
Go over the hill and go play in that challenge.
I could see Peter in a Wild Coast Sun hotel uniform. That
yeah,
tells.
It tracks. I feel like he could be like, you know, he could be running the golf course or something. He's a very athletic person. A lot of stuff he could be doing at a resort.
Well, you know the guy who's driving that van that they all do the interview after they leave? That's Peter, bro. He's driving the truck. I'm telling you.
What? Maybe that's why he was helping Kieran. Kieran's like, you're a part of production. Help me here.
Well, here's the big brain conspiracy theory. Obviously, I think Chappie's negated this because of the way that he treated his wife. But could there be a world where, because of COVID restrictions, they couldn't bring in loved ones? They instead brought in six members of production to act as the loved ones for the contestants.
How did they get Santoni's sister to look just like her?
That's actually like, okay, CGI.
Or like prosthetics.
Okay,
Santoni, we're just going to do a mold of your body and face and everything. Change the hair and put it on one of the camera people.
Absolutely love your theories, Mike. I mean, if that was not Chappie's wife, then that was an inappropriate interaction. So that's the best.
Yes.
And the last brand that I have is Future Life. Now, I think Future Life have been listening and trying to be a bit more like, we're watching the episode, because they had like Chappie's wins again or Santoni is gone, but then just like more brand stuff. But one thing that they tweeted, and I checked, this was during the episode, so it must have been about Survivor South Africa. They said, go with your gut, says Tonya. Did you know that Future Life brand flakes is the world's first breakfast to combine fiber and probiotics, blah blah blah, but girl. Who is Tonya?
Were they accidentally watching last season instead of this season?
But no, it wasn't Tonya, it was T-O-N-J-A. And it's during the episode, like, I checked. It was 4 a.m. my time, which is
also like Sonya with a T.
Yeah, go with your gut, says Tonya. And who? No one even said go with your gut. And who is Tonya? And did you know that Future Life Brand Flakes is the world's first breakfast to combine fiber and probiotics to support the functioning of the gut? All those things. So many questions.
I think they're quoting Santoni's sister, Tonya.
Oh, that's Tonya!
Who said, go with your guts.
Oh my god. Okay.
Oh,
John.
Okay.
Okay, this is so embarrassing because earlier in the season, Future Life posted... Can I just say? Future Life posted, like replacement text. And it was, and I was like, okay, this brand's hilariously bad. So when they said, go with your guts, says Tonya, I just assumed... They had the wrong name.
Somebody in the office is Tonya.
I was just like, what is Tonya? No one on the season is Tonya. We're forgetting that they were loved ones. I was so blinded by the fact that Future Life has done the poor thing that I am in fact the fool. And I said, girl, but really I'm the girl. Girl, how could you not know that Santoni's sister is
Tonya? Yeah, you got me. Listen, Shannon, when you point that girl finger, four fingers are pointing right back at you.
Yeah, you're right. I feel like I'm smashed. Like, I want to flip on Future Life and now I'm flipping right back. I was wrong. Future Life, I tried to flip on you. I told everyone you had an idol, but, you know, we're back now.
I will say, I'm glad that it clarified her sister's name, because I could have sworn that Santoni's sister's name was Tony, and I'm like, this has to be the least creative set of parents I've ever heard in my life.
I love it. We're learning so much about the parents. Nicole's parents, lovely people. Yeah. Santoni's parents, uncreative.
All right, we have three children. We have Santoni. Tony and Son are my three children.
Tony and Sunny.
Yeah. I mean, look, I didn't know. Okay, so there you go. Future Life is watching the show more closely than me. Oh, my God. Mike, can you run the podcast by yourself? Because I quit. Can you do this?
Never.
Can you do it alone?
No, Shannon, you're in here for the long
haul. No, I'm out. I mean, I could cut this out, but it is the most humiliating moment of my life. Future Life is more invested than I am. And, like, those in glass houses shouldn't throw Future Life. And I Oh my god, they know the name of Santanisa Stone. I didn't know when I said girl.
Tell me, Paul.
You didn't say girl. You said girl.
That's me. I'm the
three times,
girl.
I think.
That's me. I'm not watching. Okay, Future Life has been sent through to the next round of the Branchula. They're in.
Wow. They're better than me. Might be a front runner now at this point because they like they are they humiliated you.
Yeah, that wouldn't be why. It would be because I feel bad. I mean, I don't just like, I mean, I don't like that they humiliated me. But thank God that you were here, Jean, to tell us this. Because I feel like, Mike, you also weren't like, you were like, what are
no,
they saying?
No, I thought her sister's name was Tony.
Okay, Future Life are running the podcast now. The Future Life marketing manager will be hosting the podcast next week, guys. And that's what they won in this embarrassing incident. So I should probably get rid of the brand.
I just took notes. That's all. I know everybody's loved ones' names because it's literally sitting in front of me here. And I was like, wait, that sounds familiar.
I have 2,000 words of notes.
and not one of them is Tanya.
And one of them
not
is
one
girl.
Of them is Santoni, sister Tanya.
Okay, look, I don't.
Tyson, Buddy, and Dile.
I don't pay attention to the loved ones' names. I never do. Is that so bad? I already know these people. I don't want to meet new people. Like, even when it was Peter, I didn't even pay attention to that until the second watch. I'm like, oh, his name's like my husband's name. I might remember that, but I probably won't.
I thought it was cool, though, that, you know, Tyson's buddy was named Undile, considering Olsendile and what that means in terms of the merged tribe. So again, listen, I'm just saying, could it be possible that Undile is not a person, but they said, oh, this is close enough to the merged tribe name. We'll create this character that this man will play.
Thank you so much for taking the attention of my embarrassing thing with your very embarrassing theory, Mike. I appreciate you just putting yourself out there like that. I don't think the loved ones are production. I think that they're their loved ones. Sometimes Occam's razor.
They're the real loved ones.
Yeah, I think they're the real loved ones. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for your theory, but I'm really shutting that down. Then it like comes out in LaRue's like listening to this podcast. Like, how did they know? maybe. But look, I'm humiliated. Who should I get rid of, Mike? Because I kind of want to bring Outrance back. Like, I just got rid of Outrance, but this was so great. Like, every single time I get rid of a brand, they're great. And then I don't want them to be out of the Branchula.
What are the options again?
Fresh Stop, Future Life, mm-hmm. Wild Coast mm-hmm. Sun, Mahindra. I think that's it.
Yeah, I mean we're getting, as I said, to the pointy end of the game. Like we can't go into the finale with four brands still active, Shannon. I think
maybe
we gotta cut one here.
I don't want to let go. I mean,
wait. I mean,
they should do a five challenge.
Yes,
ooh,
that's how we'll do it.
I like that idea.
Yeah,
but I think who girl
uses
this
fire
week?
In their ads.
Well, there you go. They've got an advantage.
So Mahindra was the one that girled this week, right?
No, Fresh Stop girled. Mahindra asked why you aren't seeing your loved ones at the moment.
Ooh. Oh, okay, then Mahindra. Absolutely 100%.
That's only the thing that knocks out a front runner like Mahindra.
Oh, 100%.
At least they're interested
people
in what's
been,
going on with
people
you.
People have been booted from The Bachelor before, Shannon, for saying problematic things. That is a problematic thing to me from a brand.
I don't know.
Yeah, Shannon, that's literally saying, why have you not seen your loved ones? Perhaps they're dead from COVID.
I don't think that's what, I mean, do you think that's what they meant?
I mean, no, but that's where it can go.
It could go.
In a whole global pandemic.
Counterpoint, Fresh Stop's only interesting thing they said this week was girl, and then they embarrassingly made me incorrectly girl, and I kind of blame them for that.
Mm-mm.
There are 12 views in this, I think. I can't count off the top of my head. I don't know. This is so hard. I don't want to get rid of any of them. I love all the brands. Ugh. I'm bringing Outrance back. That's what we're doing this week. Outrance is coming back. We're getting rid of no one. We're going to the finale
oh
with all
God.
The brands.
This is worse than Australian Survivor.
I actually refuse to part with them. I'm so sorry that the Branchula is going so poorly, but what I've done is I've brought out Sharon's back. But that was the choice. I feel good about it. Girl, what are you doing? What is going on? I've like lost the plot of this. I can't believe Future Life knows more about Survivor than me. I'm just absolutely done. I like dedicated my life to this show, and Future Life is clearly not watching and they know who Tanya is. I just can't believe this happened. Anyway, I had some questions from the listeners, like my spiral into...
This podcast is literally ending with you having a mental breakdown.
Yeah. There she goes, girl, down the tubes.
Yeah, no, I felt primed for it, so I'm actually fine that it's happening, I guess. All right, I'll do one question so we don't end on this note. We had Tiffany on Twitter ask, as much as I'm very sad to see Santini go, is this a better ending or sender for her than potentially not getting credit in a final two?
That's tough. I mean, I would love to ask John, you know, would you rather have like been voted off earlier, or is making the final two and albeit not winning, you know, an accomplishment enough on its own?
No, there was no part of me that had any other outcome in my brain. The thought of I didn't even have clothing for jury. When I say that people playing towards like loved ones or the jury, like, fascinates me. Like, how do you have that? Like, you're putting that into the universe. That was never, my language was always when I sit at the end and plead my case to the jury. When I sit at the end, when I get to final two, final three, whatever. I mean, we didn't know what it was at the time. So I think Santoni, I think she's proud of the way that she went out. I think she's proud of the way she's played. And I think it was fitting to go out in that fire challenge, coming so close and putting up a proper battle and proving again that she was underestimated, even in that challenge, sitting in front of everybody who she's been a pivotal role in voting out, still surprised that she is in it to win it. So I think Santoni is probably really proud of going out the way she did, but I think that person asking the question doesn't give Santoni as much credit for the game she played. If Santoni was sitting in final two or three, she's got a very good case on her hand. If she's sitting against Tyson or Kieran or Chappies, it's difficult, but she still is not, she's not going to derail the whole thing. And I think that's underselling her.
Yeah.
No, that's going to be Chappies, right? According to Warda, that he's going to get as many votes as Darrow did.
I mean, yeah, they're turning Darrow into a verb. It's concerning.
That's rich because I was Darrow. So, well,
Jean? I mean, you got a vote. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but claim it. It doesn't get to be Darrow. Although I think what they're saying is like zero votes, because that's not happened in the reboot. And that's what Darrowing is.
No, I think that person asking the question underestimates Antoni's game. I rate her, but I don't think a lot. I think a lot of casual viewers just see her as a flip-flopper. And for me, that's a solid strategy. And how you manage it is key. And I think she's done actually a really good job. And when I saw the jury responding to her actually doing really well in that fire challenge, I realized, like, somebody like Sean is Team Santoni, which I find fascinating.
Yeah, well, I wonder if it's a matter of like the narrative that had been built up to that point, right? And that was why they were so excited by what happened in the tribal council beforehand of, okay, you know, you have Tyson and Kieran and Warda, you know, sort of spurned us to work with Santoni and Chappies, and now Santoni and Chappies are the ones that are screwing them over. I'm sure that was a satisfying narrative from their perspective. But I agree, you know, even though a few weeks ago I'm like, maybe she's being perceived as a jury goat, it does seem like from what was being talked about at Tribal Council that she had at least a shot with the right argument and with the right person she's sitting next to of doing fairly well, which again is really cool for someone who a lot of us pegged as not doing well at all coming into the game. And so I guess from that perspective, and it also goes back to a question we asked preseason, Shannon, right? Of like, would you rather be voted out pre-merge or finish with zero votes at the final Tribal Council? Like, I think Santoni is someone who would rather be voted out with zero votes at the final tribal council, because to her, it's a matter of like, I did what I didn't think I could do at all. And a lot of people couldn't think I would do, which is make it to the final two. So that being said, if she had to go out before the final two, I'm glad she went out the way that she did, which was putting forward like an impressive performance, being factually correct about the vote. It was just ironically enough being done in by a rogue factor.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would have been interesting in the final two or three, because as we heard from the jury, like, they did say she was playing the biggest game, but they did seem burned by her. I mean, to defend our question asker Tiffany, she did say them potentially not getting credit, which there were people who maybe were going to come in really angry at her. It was not a pleasant first night at Jury Villa for her, but I think if she could have, you know, turned it into a good argument, she possibly could have got a lot of credit. So, a bit unfortunate, but I do have to say two things that are important. So I opened my phone because I got a message of a new raffle entry. 20 tickets bought. We are now up to 81 tickets in the space of the last 20 minutes. And I also had a message from Lily the Bichon on Instagram, who DM'd me
The Bichon Frise, like the type of dog.
It's a dog account, yeah. And it said, girl, when you're releasing the SA podcast, I swear to God, it says G-I-R-L-L. When you, I feel like you're not going to believe me.
We found the person who's running the Fresh Stop account.
Lily the Bichon. I have to send you a screenshot because I wish this was a video podcast. I swear to God.
This is not live, right?
No, we are not broadcasting.
Right?
No,
now.
No.
That is weird.
Crazy coincidence.
Somebody's listening in your phone, bro.
Are you in the house, Lily? Are you in the apartment? We're in lockdown. How are you here? Like, what? Anyway, I cannot believe this. Crazy. I feel like I'm being watched. But anyway, in my descent into madness, this has happened. John, thank you for being witness to it, to my descent. Where can people find you? Because as we mentioned, you're recapping it every week on Instagram. So people want the takes. Mm-hmm. You're giving the takes.
Yeah, on Instagram, Jean-Michel 1983. And we do a recap every Sunday at 7 o'clock South African time, a little late for the Australians. However, it is always up, mm-hmm. except last week's episode. But last week's I don't know what happened. Instagram decided they didn't want to upload my thing. But it's always entertaining. A lot of the Survivor castaways are a part of the conversation in the chat. I generally think the chat is more lit than my recap, but I'm going to, yeah. It's always good time. It's an hour long, and yeah, there's lots and lots of interaction. LaRue always pops in. He shares little bits of things that we probably shouldn't know. But yeah, it's a good time.
I feel
very
the same.
Very much like Santini. He pops in, says something, says, I shouldn't have said that. Why did I say that?
Santini is like Hagrid, and that's what we say. But the tie-dye like Rupert, I shouldn't have said that. I'm seeing the connection between this like triumvirate of characters.
I should not have said that.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And Santini, though Santini did not go out saying so much for my dreams, so yeah. She missed out on that, checking that box.
That's true. I mean, look, I think there was more strategic force there than Rupert has usually given, but it's a good segue because, Mike, what do you have going on in the podcast world? Possibly a Rupert-esque thing.
Oh, I am living in tie-dye right now, my friends. I have been brought on to the RHAP countdown this week to talk about the third best season of Survivor, as voted by the fans, Survivor Pearl Islands, a season that introduced us to Rupert, introduced us to Sandra Diaz-Twine, introduced us to Johnny Fairplay. Wow. It is my favorite Survivor season. It is one of my favorite reality TV seasons of all time. I'm almost done at the point where we're recording this right now, so breaking that down with Rob and Haley Strong. But that's not the only Survivor I'm talking about this week.
I can't do more,
I'm sorry, Shannon, there's more Survivor coming your way. Because I'll give this away. I'm not sure when this is being released, but by the time you're listening to this, there is a chance that the Survivor 41 cast will be released. Finally. After over a year and nearly a half of no U.S. Survivor in our lives, it's here. It's ready. I don't know if I'm ready for it, but no. I have stuff up at parade.com. I have profiles on all 18 cast members. I have an interview with Jeff Probst where he describes all of the new stuff that's coming into this season. He's really looking at it as a new era of Survivor, and there are so many things included in that very loaded term. And then Rob Cesternino and I will have done a sort of like first reactions podcast that we'll be doing as soon as the cast is released, giving our thoughts on the new twist, new structure of the game, previewing very quickly the 18 cast members, because we are going all out on the preview for Survivor 41. I am releasing interviews that I did with the cast preseason 2 times a day for the next week and a half over at parade.com. Every day I'm going to be covering a woman in the morning and a man in the afternoon. Basically, I did what we did for Survivor South Africa. I sent in questions. They were asked to the contestants. Their responses were recorded. I turned those into articles. And so we get to know the cast that way. I also took some answers, put them in audio form, and Rob and I are going to preview the cast members as well in podcast form. So if you want to just shove your hands into Survivor 41, we are opening up that ability to do so as the preseason begins incredibly soon. Outside of that, Big Brother is somehow still going on. I'm doing exit press for that at parade.com, as well as doing the RHAP B&B. I got together with Liana Boris and special guest Kirsten McGinnis to break down the past few weeks of Big Brother. I was on Renap this past week with Jessica Lease talking about Star Trek, which is one of my other many non-reality TV loves. And then outside of that, speaking of scripted stuff, Down the Hatch, the Bloom Files over on Posha Recaps as well. But at the moment, my mind has been solely fixated on Survivor, and it will be for the time being, including with this very, very fun season so far. I think the past few episodes in particular have been, for lack of a better term, fire. And I'm really excited to see where things go next.
No more saying fire in any context, guys. That's done. But
that's going to be real tough. Yeah. We're about to talk about the US season.
Stand on.
Yeah. No, Mike, I hope that you shoehorned in a yeah into your audio interviews. I'll be pretty disappointed if you didn't. But I'm really glad that Future Life is taking over the Survivor South Africa podcast from next week, because I can't handle all of that Survivor. It's too much. So thank you, Future Life. You guys are watching the show so closely, and I am not. But so much Survivor stuff going on. Australian Survivor, Talking Tribal is happening. We're in the second last week. Last week we had Tessa O'Halloran. This week we have Baden Gilbert, recapping it every week. Exit interviews. It's a lot. Next week on Survivor South Africa, we should have Adam Klein. I know I've said that before, but we should have him. So that should be the guess. And that's what's going on in the Survivor world. But John, thank you so much. This has been so fun. Seriously. I'm sorry I went a little bit crazy, but I enjoyed it.
That's okay. Crazy is good. Crazy is entertaining, as Santoni proved on Survivor South Africa.
Yeah, well, that's like high praise, I would say, if that's what we're comparing it to. But thank you so much for being here. Thank you, Mike, as well. Thank you to everyone for listening. I am going to throw it to the ex interview with Santoni. And Mike, you don't want to miss that. And girl, hope you enjoy.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
All right, everybody. To say I'm excited to talk to this person would be an understatement. We are talking to the Idol Whisperer, the Idol Queen, the Tie-Dye Queen. Give her whatever name you want to. She's just Santoni, no last name needed. She's like Cher. So happy to talk to her. Santoni, how's it going?
Oh, wow, that introduction was fabulous. I'm doing so well. I'm so happy.
Amazing. That's good to hear. I mean, look, you said in your Ponderosa video that in the way, any way you could have gone out, it was the best way possible, right? You had a second chance. You were able to make fire with a flint for the first time in your life. So really, despite, you know, the sad circumstances, it was the happiest way you could have gone out.
Yes, definitely.
All right, well, let's start with how things ended. There was a big kerfuffle with Anella splitting away from your plan and then the fire idol being played. Were you surprised at how the votes went down, that it ended up being that 3-2-1 into the fire making?
Yes, I was surprised. I really believed that Anella would stick to the plan, because I think it was a good plan for his game as well as mine. I really was surprised that he didn't stick to the plan.
What was your reaction to that tribal council in general? Obviously, we'll talk about everything going on with Kieran, but, you know, hearing about Anella's plan and then him sort of turning things onto you, what was your thoughts during that entire time, to your point, as you had this plan sort of brewing in your head?
Well, I think I talked myself into being the one voted for. I was very conscious always to keep a low profile at tribal council and just keep my mouth shut. But I wasn't able to do it on the night. And I think the Kieran betrayal kind of really got to me. So I think my emotions just took over. But I talked myself into being voted off.
So what was it in that moment? Was it like Kieran specifically? Because we'll talk obviously a lot more about your thoughts on betrayal. Was it him sort of vocalizing that at tribal council that was the breaking point for you to sort of snap back at him.
Yeah, I mean, that night is a bit of a blur to me. Mm. But yeah, it is really, when I sat there, I really was in two minds where I was going to go. And I really wanted to know, out of the two, both that I felt betrayed by, who I could trust more. So yeah, Kieran's reaction did prompt me to, I don't know, react like that.
Well, when you were leaving, I know you said that, the way the tribal council went, I'm not sure if I would have even gotten any votes if I got to the end. Talk to me about that. Did you feel like in that moment, the way he was vocalizing, stuff about you playing a victim, that you thought that you really had no shot? And was that a change from what you had been thinking previously to that?
Well, my whole strategy was to stay in the moment. So I never thought more than 2 or 3 days ahead, because you can get ahead of yourself and lose the moment. So I really never thought about the final as consciously as you might think. Yes, in that moment, I really thought that the jury are all very passionate people, and they're also all very emotional, and they all were betrayed by me in some way or another. So I did feel the vibe from them, especially when I was making fire and they were all rooting for Tyson. But in hindsight, I have seen some of the Ponderosa conversations where they have mentioned that I played the best game. So actually, if you think about it, I might have actually stood a good chance of beating some of the big guns that I might in that moment never thought I would be able to.
Right. Speaking of that, I know when you came back to the jury, not the the smoothest night, I would say. Bit of an awkward conversation with all parties. Now, I'm imagining it's going to get warmer from here, but what was that like for you to go, for lack of a better term, like out of the frying pan and into the fire when it came from, going into the jury?
I was literally going to say it was hell. It was hell. It was absolute hell. And there was no alcohol. So it was hell. No, it's very hard to go and sit there and be like put under cross-examination. Mm-hmm. There, especially because it's so late at night already, and I was really finished. I mean, you can see as the episodes go on, I just look more tired and tired every day. So that was quite intense. It was a very cold reception, especially Warda didn't speak at all. Obviously, Renier and everyone there. And I mean, they were within their right. I mean, they wanted answers. At that moment, it was just kind of a lot to take in.
So early on in the show, you say that you love playing both sides. You feel like you don't like being emotionally attached. You like not being loyal to one particular person so you can move and fluctuate. Did that attitude change as it got later in the game? Or the entire time were you thinking that playing both sides was the way you should play?
I think after that merge vote, it started to get more difficult because I did draw a line in the sand. And from that point, I actually wanted to be more loyal to a certain party. But for me, the one person that I had, that person had my undying love and loyalty was Chappies. But in Survivor, you need to be able to be fluid and you can't be so attached. So yeah, but it definitely got more difficult towards the end.
Talk to me about your relationship with Chappies, because I mean, in the beginning, you do get rid of his closest ally, Paul. He then saves your life. And then you really become one of the tightest duos in the game. Were you always that tight? Was there a specific time when you're like, okay, this is the guy that I want to ride with?
You know what? It's interesting. So within a few minutes, once we got to our first camp, we chatted briefly and we both figured out we come from the same hometown and we both, and we grew up 500 meters from each other and we never met each other. So that was quite cool. And we also shared a similar traumatic experience of losing someone very close to us to suicide. So that really bonded me with him. Also, we both Afrikaans and he kind of reminded me a lot of my dad. And I'm always one for the underdog. So Chappies was always Like, I don't know, people didn't necessarily like him for whatever reason. So I was just always in his corner because I always feel for the underdog, even though I was probably the bigger underdog of the two of us. But then as it went on, I was close to him as a friend, but I wasn't not going to play my game and do what I needed to do for my game just to keep him happy or to protect him. I remember specifically the poll vote. Actually, Amy, Sean, and Anela wanted that vote to be Chappie's. Mm. They were pushing very hard for that to be Chappie's. And that whole story I turned around so that it could go Paul's way, rather. And again, people were always nervous about me and Chappie's, but I always convinced them, I'm his friend, but we don't necessarily play the same kind of game and we don't play together. Mm. And it also made it easy because, not to ramble, but Chappie's was always missing. Like, he was always busy on the beach, busy catching stuff. So it was quite easy to keep that bond without actually anyone noticing because Chappie's was just missioning all over the place.
I know that you said there was a lot of deceiving and lying in your game. That wasn't the original intention. So what changed for you? Was it just the nature of the game? Was it any specific situation that made you feel like you had to be more deceptive than you thought you would be?
Yes, that wasn't the plan. But again, I went into Survivor not having a plan because you have to be able to improvise and go with the flow. Hmm. But on day one, I was really, was the oldest, the biggest, the most unfit. So no one really wanted to talk to me. I was really kind of shunned. And then I realized, you know what, Santini, you just need to, you need to be here for you and you need to protect yourself. So that mindset, it kind of motivated me. And then when I got to Immunity Island and I got the idol, the hidden one at Tribal, that clue, I think it gave me a lot more confidence to play harder, to play more aggressively, because I knew I had that in the back pocket. And again, the lying and deceiving was necessary because I never really, really ever was part of a strong alliance. I mean, that's why in the beginning part you will see I've always wanted to break up pairs. Because I did want to have people that I'm close to, but if you know you're the third wheel, you're the third wheel.
Right.
And you're going to have to make a plan.
So there was a lot to be said about your game from other people. And I'm not sure if you knew it at the time. You know, there were things about Nicole in this past episode saying that you would call yourself a victim. And then when someone else lies, you say, how dare you? A couple times, Kieran was saying we have to baby Santini to keep her voting with us. What is your reaction to that? Watching it back, hearing other people talk about your game as you're playing with them?
It is, it's not nice, let's be honest. It's not nice to hear those kinds of things. But Anesu, I think, said it in one of her exit interviews the best. Santini created this illusion of her being all over the place. She needs to be babied. She's this, she's emotional. But actually, I always knew exactly what was going on. And I think in a way, it's a bit of a tactic to disarm people because they do think I am this crazy, paranoid, whatever person, which in parts I was, but I always knew what I wanted to do and how I was going to do it. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does. And I mean, to your point, there are boots like getting rid of Sean, getting rid of Warda last episode that I think people would say, well, that's more of a Santini move than anything. Was that purposeful? Was that you saying, well, look, I want to go for the person that's most dangerous to my game, so let me convince my allies to vote that way?
Yeah, I do think so. But actually more, it would have been dangerous for whoever at that point I was aligned with, not just only me. Because Sean was a very good player. He was really a very, very good player. And there, in that specific situation, Kieran suggested we'd rather go for Anela. But I think for everyone, it was better that Sean left because he was a way better and more strategic player. The same for Warda. I mean, there is this idea that Warda is the third wheel of the three-headed snake, but she was way more strategic than Tyson. Really, that girl was a hardcore player. So again, I knew it would benefit me and Chappie's at that point to rather go for her over Tyson.
So let's talk about some of the fan reception as well, because it's safe to say the internet is talking all about you, Santini. You were a big part of this season. Has it surprised you to see the fan reaction? What has been your thoughts about all the outpouring of support, not support, just talk in general about you this season?
I'm quite surprised, actually, because I don't see myself in that way. But going into the game, I always said, as a fan, I don't want to play a boring game. If people love me or they hate me, I don't care. I just want to play a good game and an exciting game. And the fact that people are talking about me in good or bad ways, I think I did what I set out to do as a big Survivor fan. Yeah.
I know that you ended your Jury Villa saying, well, this has taught me that family is the most important thing. And it's so interesting. You know, last episode you said, I told my family I never buy the letter. You're talking about advice from your sister. What changed about you out there? Like you said, I don't think you had much of a plan going in, but what sort of had you go from that person that said, don't need the letter, to please give me that letter, I want it right now?
You know, Survivor is actually a very lonely place. You are so lonely because it's like high school, the first day of high school, and you don't know anyone, but at least you can go home and cry on your mother's shoulder or whatever. But Survivor is like how many days of really feeling quite lonely. So yes, it really did change. I really needed that letter from home, and it really gave me that boost. But what did change for me in my daily life after Survivor is to really appreciate the small things that you have, and that you don't need all these like earthly possessions. You can really get by with so little. And mm-hmm. And I'm thankful every day and to be grateful.
Now, that being said, are you ready to re-enroll in high school? I'm seeing so many calls for Santini for All-Stars. If you were to receive that call, would you pick it up?
Of course. You know what? A funny little story is the first day at Vuna, or the second day, people asked, guys, if you knew what you know now, would you play again? And everyone said no, except me.
Wow. So
not a lie. So I am ready to go back. That's why for me, not necessarily ending up in the final three or two or whatever, is actually for me a win. Because all I want to do is go and play Survivor again. I want an Island of the Idols with a little statue of me and Chappies. Like, that's how far I want to go.
I listen, if we go to visit the Island of the Idols and it's you and Chappies, I'm not sure what I'm in for. You could probably guide me to an idol or two. So I guess you'd be helpful in that regard. Well, Santini, it's safe to say this is not going to be the last time we talk. We have so, so, so much more to talk about. And so we're definitely going to be talking in a few weeks once this season ends. But I really look forward to seeing you as a juror in particular. I'm sure we have a lot of stuff to talk about, and you have a lot of thoughts as to everything that was going on in the game. But I'm really happy we got the time to talk today. You know how much we've been a fan of you all season long. Like you said, you provided interesting gameplay, good TV, no matter what. And I want to congratulate you for, like you said, achieving your goal, going out there, making it to the final six. Not too bad for someone who thought they were going to be the first one out.
Yes, and I want to thank you and Shannon and the whole Survivor community, but especially the two of you, what you guys have done and what you constantly do for the show and all the inputs. And tell Shannon, thank you for making me lose half my idol money.
Yes.
And at least I got my letter, but I do enjoy you guys so much. And it's just a pleasure to talk to you. And I can't wait to be back.
Oh, it's going to be great. Thank you so much for the kind words. Looking forward to talking with you soon, and all the best to you and your family. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you. Bye.
There you have it, everyone. Hearing from Queen Santini, I continue to apologize to you, Santini, for taking your auction money. You did not deserve that. So such a fun time we had. I mean, I did lose my mind, but you know, within the context of what we were doing, we had a really fun time. So you can subscribe to the International Survivor Wrap-Ups feed. Follow us at Shannon Gaze, at AmyBloomType, where you can see all of the content. We're almost at the end of the season. How did this happen? Thank you so much, as always, for following along with us. We love engaging with you. We love putting out the content for you. And if you are listening, hopefully you're enjoying it. Thank you for supporting us. And we will see you next week. Until then, keep evolving. Bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Give them the
swimmers.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million.
Aldi. Million. Rubli.
Try to smoke. Try to smoke.
Try to smoke.
Try to smoke.
The adventure of a
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.